Hi.
Welcome to another movie podcast, the show dedicated to love films that you never see and most likely to test the ones that you have. I am Oscar, and with me today is
Luke
and
Ralph.
Nice. This is episode number 23.
We're professionals.
We're professionals. Today's show will consist of two out of our marathon.
No viewers saw you do that.
Because
we have listeners.
You just fucked it up. Mm-hmm. We don't have video here. We'll be reviewing two Hayao Miyazaki. I don't know if you pronounce the whole thing right. Miyazaki films. One from way in a distant past of his career, Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, and then one of his most recent his standout film in the U.S.
Yes.
It's Spirited Away. And then we'll conclude our show with a review of the latest Marvel franchise installment, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Always, you know, feedback can be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Podmoviecast is also where you can find us on Twitter. Don't forget that otherpodcast.com is where you can find the website that has every bit of information you can possibly need for bonuses, marathons, top tens we've made, past shows, every show we've done, actually, about us a little bit, everything you can find on how to donate to us, things like that. And everything is on detailed show notes for every episode you download. All right. Before we get into this week's first review, let us talk about what we've been watching. Everyone ready? Well, I have three films, so just sit back and just pretend like you know, like you're listening.
Got this.
Right? Bunch of fucking you. First of all, I saw a South Korean horror film called Train to Busan. Anyone heard of it?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, good.
Nope.
It's on Netflix right now, by the way, if you want to see it. Traveling from Seoul to Busan, a group of passengers must survive an epidemic of fast-acting hordes of zombies, particularly a father and a daughter. What?
Rochelle.
Oh, yeah. The train from Paris to Minsk?
Milan to Minsk.
Yeah. Sorry. That's a Seinfeld reference. Kids, ask your parents. Train to Busan.
No, kids. Watch some good TV.
Right, ask your parents and then watch some good TV.
Good sitcom. There's a lot of good TV.
We're in the golden age of television. I'm sure they're fine. So Train to Busan, it came out technically last year, but it came out way early, like January, like the first week of January. So it came out on Netflix here as a U.S. release and to rent and stuff. So, yeah, this is a kind of run-of-the-mill zombie thing. But it's like a lot of people compared it to like Snowpiercer meets 28 Days Later or something because they're like fast-running type of zombies. That's not a bad comparison, except those two films are better than this one. So that's not like, you know, Snowpiercer has so much style and 28 Days Later was like the first of its kind. So you can't really go wrong with,
sure,
you know. So Train to Busan does not really meet that comparison, but it is an apt comparison because it does feel that way. And the whole thing is kind of, I don't want to say paint by numbers, but like the whole father-daughter, like he's like a businessman that never gets to see her or recitals or her or pays attention to her and is forced to do so in the context of the, you know, traveling to Busan and getting out of fucking hell. But the graphics are pretty cool. They're not terrible. They're way better than you might expect. I don't know what you expect in a South Korean horror movie, but it's pretty insane. They usually deal with serial killers or more like suspenseful stuff in their films. So this is a lot more out there.
Okay.
A lot more, I guess, maybe American or action-packed.
Americanized?
Yeah, a little bit more.
Okay.
I will say this though, that a lot of this movie does more than others about this, you know, in the same oeuvre, is that it doubles down on like humanity's ability to be fucking assholes. Like like, you know how there's people that are, because of fear or selfishness, they would push somebody else in front of a zombie to save themselves, right? In the heat of the moment. They take that and double, triple, quadruple down on it with one or two characters in a way that makes you hate life and hate that they are succeeding as far as they get to be. That doesn't spoil anything, but watch it if you know, and you know what I mean. So yeah, that's the Train to Busan. It was fun, very fun to watch. Not like a great, you know, think piece, but it's fun to watch.
Cool.
So I recommended it. It's on Netflix. I also saw, let's see, The Lost City of Z.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. I've been totally meaning to go watch this.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, we totally wanted to watch it, but you didn't invite us.
Right. I actually almost downloaded the book, so I can listen to it.
Yeah, I've been thinking of getting the book to see how it feels, but I've heard that the book and the movie are kind of different. Like, different in big ways.
Big ways? Okay.
Here's a description for you guys.
I'm glad I did it better.
The story of a famous British explorer, Colonel Percy Fawcett. It tells of his visit to the Amazon jungle in the early 1900s and his motivation to find a legendary lost civilization, which he called the lost city of Zed, because I guess in England, Z, they say Zed. But here in America, it's Z, so we just say Z. So, and it stars Charlie Hunnam, of all people. And I know that from what I heard about the director, James Gray, who did the amazing The Immigrant, came out a few years ago.
I totally didn't watch that movie.
It's on, I don't know if it's on Netflix, but it was on Netflix then.
Okay.
So he did The Immigrant. He did Two Lovers. He did, We Own the Night.
Oh, I saw We Own the Night. Right? That was the one with the club, right?
Yeah, the club with... Yeah.
Joaquin?
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is in all of his movies, though, except for this one. So, he's like
you
a
You didn't know, but he played like a gorilla or something.
He played
movie.
A tree.
There you go.
In the jungle.
You didn't,
right.
You didn't know.
You know, he was the grass.
He was... There was no grass, actually. It's all jungle. Anyway. So, he's a great filmmaker. The reason I saw it is because of him. Not because of Charlie Hunnam or anything. Although I would say this is probably Charlie Hunnam's best performance, but that's not saying a whole lot because the guy's not like known to be great at acting. He's just like a pretty boy.
And we haven't seen him
with
in,
action.
You know,
but we also haven't seen his muscle stretched, right? Acting wise?
Sure.
Until this movie. And I think it does well. Like it's not a Werner Herzog depiction of like brutality of nature taking over man's humanity. You know, it's not that. But it does talk a lot of ambition and how it completely upset. It becomes obsessed for the man, and the movie, which has had middling reviews, but more positive than negative.
Okay,
it's hard to describe this movie without really talking about it, so I'm not gonna do that here. But I will say that I loved it, and I love how it had a wide palette of things that if you saw it, Rob, you could come out with something completely different with enough support in the movie, because it's like 2.5 hours, to justify it, as well as I could have a completely different view with equal amount of support, and Luke can have a different one. But and I think it's in a good way. A lot of people see that, maybe can see it as like, oh, it's very directionless, doesn't know what it wants to do. But I think it does it all kind of really well. And it spans time in a way you think that is impossible. Like, you think the movie's about to end, and it doesn't end. It's kind of like maybe like Lord of the Rings. But it doesn't say he's going to end it, but it feels like, oh, it's got to be the third act. And no, he's still alive. He still makes it out every time, you know. So The Lost City of Z, I really liked it. It's kind of conflicting to talk about. I want to talk about it more at an eventual date. But sure. Yeah, I totally loved it.
The Hunmans is also King Arthur, right?
Yeah, that's right. He's this is his month. Right?
Yeah, it is his month. Yeah, yeah, sure.
The last movie I saw here is on VOD right now is The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which I won't ask if anyone's heard about it because most likely it's not. A father and son, who are coroners, must find the cause of death of a mysterious woman with puzzling bodily harm and ailments that defy reason. And this stars Emil Hirsch. Remember him? He was really big earlier in the 2000s.
Doesn't ring a bell.
He was like one of those teenage stars. He's older now.
Does ring a bell. Yeah. Can't remember his
He's
face,
Into
though.
The Wild. Remember Into the Wild?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. The main actor. He's the only actor, actually. Emil Hirsch and Brian Cox, who plays Colonel Stryker in the X-Men movies.
No, I know who Brian Cox is.
Oh, I don't know if you know. Okay, cool.
Cox.
Really? Brian Vagina. No relation. So The Autopsy of Jane Doe is like a suspenseful horror movie. Not a thriller, but suspenseful for sure. It's bizarre. It's definitely, what I described is like the easiest description, like the most PG description. I didn't bring it up the notes. I forgot to write it down. But the woman who plays the dead body, that they're, you know, Jane Doe. So one night, this cop in the small town bring these two who are about to close up, you know, the coroners, the father-son team, this body. He's like, hey, I need to know by tomorrow before the news tells me. So I need to know answers because something weird's going on. And there's like the third body or something. And this is the weirdest one or whatever. And sure. They start inspecting it and whatever. And everything about the woman's cause of death, it doesn't have a definitive answer because all these things about her insights are the cause of death, but they're all different. And the stages of the punishment that her body has endured defies reason that she would get that far and still be this fresh of a body to get that far. And her outside is much, it looks preserved compared to the inside. Huh, so it doesn't make any sense. And they start inspecting it. You know, they pull like a, you know, some skin out. It's very body horror. So if you're not into body horror, don't watch this movie at all. But if you are, this is perfect for that. They will pull like a flap of skin from the femur or whatever. And on the inside, there's like hieroglyphics or some sort of like cultist writing in it. And there's like fucked up weird things. And it leads to like a nice, cool ending. Not like a perfect ending, but it was a nice, cool ending. And it's pretty, I just liked it. It's totally up my alley if you're into horror.
That's cool.
So that's The Autopsy of Jane Doe. And I will say that the actress who played her, I'm sorry I don't have the name in front of me, but fucking big cojones on that one. She had to complete, you know, because that was really a live actor doing it for most of the scenes, of course. And she had to be naked and pretend to be dead, but also like barely, like a little alive, alive enough to be sinister. It's like this weird acting that you never get to see in
Interesting.
Movies. So, yeah, so those are my three movies. Roth, you have two yourself. You've seen something.
Yeah, I remember the first one. You'll have to remind me of the second one.
All right.
So I saw Lion, that one movie that was nominated for a shit ton of things that nobody knew what the movie was about.
Still haven't seen it.
Exactly. Cool. I'll read the quick one because there's a lot of long ones. A 5-year-old Indian boy gets lost on the streets of Calcutta, thousands of kilometers from home. He survives many challenges before being adopted by a couple in Australia. 25 years later, he sets out to find his lost family. So this is a movie that stars Dev Patel, Nicole Kidman, Rooney Mara, and Sonny Pawar. Or Pawar.
Dev Patel from Chappie fame.
Sure.
Okay.
Fuck that movie.
Yeah. So, interesting movie, obviously. I know there's the build cast or whatever. The movie basically, it's got two, I mean, there's three acts in it, but it's split up in young Saru and then old Saru, or current Saru.
Okay.
And young Saru is obviously the sunny kid who was at the Academy Awards and looked really cute or cool. And you see basically what happens is like in the description. It's an interesting story. You see like how he lives in poverty. And a mistake happens, and he goes through this. He suffers, obviously, and then he just kind of. And you think it's just gonna skip from there. You think they're gonna flash forward, and they never do. Like the movie kind of like hints at you, like we're gonna flash forward, or we're gonna like think it's flashbacks a lot. But in reality, it's just more like no, we're gonna tell you everything that happened, and then we're gonna go with like how this guy went on a journey to try to figure out like if his family is still looking for him or around, you know, or even alive.
Okay.
And it's interesting. But the first half is way better than the second half. The second half falls short. I would have never.
That's what I heard. Right?
Yeah, I would have never, like. I understand why it didn't win anything, like, if it did win anything. I forgot already.
Me too.
But I get why it was nominated. Some strong emotional stuff going on, some really good visuals. It just misses a note somewhere, and I don't know if it's Dev, but like there's this weird thing where he's got Rooney Mara as his girlfriend, Dev Patel, and it just feels weird. Like it doesn't feel real. It feels like tacked on, kind of ish. And I get that's what they're trying to follow his story or whatever, but like I don't know. It fell short, unfortunately, for me. The ending is cool. It's really cool. But that middle part of the movie is kind of a drag.
All right.
So I'd still say it's a cool watch if you're into those, like, I guess kind of a biopic, if you want to, if that's what it is. It's a biography, for
it's
sure.
It's based on a book, right? Yeah, by the real
yeah, events. It's a real events.
Real events.
Book. Real events that took place, yeah. It's a drama, so obviously, like, my wife cried because that's who she is. She's a crier. But, yeah, that's Lion.
You guys stopped punching her. Also,
well, that too.
Why is it called Lion, by the way? Can you answer that question?
So yeah, actually, that's kind of the very end of the movie.
Oh, the spoil?
No.
Okay.
He says his name wrong his whole life, Saru, and they say his name right at the end. There's a Saru or some other way I already forgot, and that means lion in his language.
Oh, okay.
So his name is actually Lion.
Yeah, one of those movie titles where like the title is revealed at the end of the
exactly,
movie.
Exactly. Yeah,
they're rare, but
they are rare, and that's actually cool. I like the ending of that.
I like that.
Is that he was so young when it happened? He was like 5 or 6 or something like that. He was just saying everything wrong, or like his own version of it.
Learning
exactly.
All right, and you have another movie, Major League.
Oh yeah, totally Major League. So I'll read this quick description of it, even though it's an old ass movie. The new owner of Cleveland Indians puts together a purposely horrible team so they'll lose and she can move the team to Florida. But when the plot is uncovered, they start winning just to spite her. And it's a comedy, obviously.
What year did it come out?
Spoiler. 89.
Right.
Yeah, spoiler, I guess. Dude, the cast is interesting. So let's bring up the cast real quick. It's got Tom Berenger, okay, Charlie Sheen, Corbin Benson, Margaret Whitten, James Gammon, Rene Russo, Wesley Snipes. Okay, guys, Wesley Snipes was still acting. He's not in jail at this point.
Isn't Dennis Haysbert in the movie? Am I wrong?
Yes, Dennis. I was about to get to Dennis Haysbert. Yeah. Charles Cyphers. Was it Chelsea Ross or Checkley Ross? Andy Romano, Bob Urk. There's a lot of people. Anyways, but it's interesting. So it's obviously revolves more like around Charlie Sheen. Wesley Snipes is another character. What's that guy's name from? I don't think he's. Maybe I did mention his name already. The 24, the president in the original.
That's Dennis Haysbert.
That's Dennis Haysbert. Yeah. So he plays. This is what I love about his role. He plays like a Cuban or a Dominican or something like that, right?
Yeah, he does.
Okay, and he's into the occult. Mm-hmm. So he has to sacrifice like chickens and shit.
He's like a voodoo.
Yeah, he's a voodoo thing. So it's really, I guess Haiti actually, that would be making more sense. And he sacrifices things every game, right? And then the bigger the game is, the more he has to sacrifice, right? To wish the gods. And it's really funny.
I haven't seen this in forever, but
he's always lifting weights. It's really funny. He's lifting weights, but he's wearing a Speedo while he's doing it only.
Yeah.
And it's super funny. And he's like really buff though. It's a funny movie. It's still funny. It still holds up. It's funny how the Cleveland Indians still haven't won a damn thing.
We should do a marathon on baseball movies because there's so many good ones.
There's so many good ones. Yeah,
there's so many good ones. Just baseball, though. You have no idea how many good ones.
This is a fun movie to watch. And it's funny how they spite her.
Rene Russo, right?
Well, yeah.
Rene Russo, the bad guy, right?
No, Rene Russo is the love interest for one of the people.
Okay, then I got it wrong.
What's funny is that, she basically screws them over for everything. They just happen to get lucky and get some wins, and they're doing pretty okay. And then they find out that she's just like, you guys suck. Like, she thinks you guys suck. She has no hope for you guys, and they're like, fuck her, we're gonna win. And that's basically what happens. And they go on getting this crazy thing.
Very American reaction to that.
Right, exactly. Oh, dude, you actually really love watching this. It is not PC at all.
It's not.
Back in the day, nothing was.
Nothing was, but I love this.
Compared to today.
Because they have a teepee for the Indians in the actual stadium, and they're in the Indian, they're around the teepee going, doing Indian sounds. It's so funny. And everything on the backboard, where the scoreboard, you know how it has visuals?
Yeah.
All of it races. All of it. Like, every single – it's just so – it's messed up. But it's so funny. It's like they're embracing it. It's not making fun of anything because it's the Cleveland Indians, and that's who they are. It's just really funny.
I actually own this movie because the day the Cubs beat the Indians for the World Series –
it went on sale.
Amazon put it on sale for $4.
Poor guy.
That makes sense. Have you seen it before?
No, I still haven't seen it. It's still wrapped.
Oh, watch it. I guess you haven't seen part two then either.
No.
Okay. I hear part two is just like a bunch of more jokes,
I will
right,
say
if I remember correctly?
Dennis Haysbert will be the replacement to Morgan Freeman when he passes.
Yeah, he does have State Farm voice, right?
We can only have Allstate. One great phenomenal voice at a time.
That's right, at a time. But he is a good contender, though. He's a runner-up.
He is.
He's a contender. So that's Major League, an old school one. Luke, you have one film for us. Go ahead.
Yes, it's a documentary called Oklahoma City. It talks about Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing of the Alfred Murrah Federal Building. It's a really good documentary. It's kind of a good setup of the political environment, especially at the times, more geared towards the extremist, right-wing people that Timothy McVeigh kind of became associated with. Because it talked a lot about some of the mistakes that they made at the Ruby Ridge standoff and in Waco and things like that, and that caused,
dark times for the FBI.
And probably ATF.
And the ATF,
ATF was big on that because, digging.
We like to throw the blame on the FBI, though.
Coming for our guns,
There's a lot of similarities. I'm sorry, I don't mean to derail in the leftovers. The ATF in that future, they get added cults into their acronyms. And there's a lot of Waco similarity talk into that.
Yeah, but it's a really good documentary. One of the better ones that I've seen so far.
Cool. Where did you get this?
It's on Netflix, actually.
Awesome.
It's and it was made by PBS. So you know it's good.
Mm.
Well, they try harder.
They should,
they do.
Yeah, because they beg for the money, so yeah.
Right, exactly.
Well, I don't think
I got a tote bag.
You got a tote bag. We all got one of those tote bags. No, it, I really want to see it. It's on my queue.
Is it like the exploded building, or how is it?
What?
The tote bag. What's the image on it? Oh, never mind. Okay, I thought it was about the movie.
I'm kidding. I know.
They're just,
I
waiting, know they're just waiting for Ken Burns to give them more work again.
Yeah, Elmo knows where you live.
Oh God. Yeah. It'll be on Elmo. All right. So that's that's what we've been watching. Jeez, that's always hard to say. Let us start. Oh, yep. I got everything here. Sorry, I got mistaken. All right. So let us start with our first review today, part of our animation marathon, ongoing. We're past the halfway point for sure. We're like four more away before ending it. And we start with 2001's Hayao Miyazaki's Spirited Away.
Excuse me. I was wondering if you could give me a job.
I don't want to hear such a stupid request. You're just a stinking, useless weakling. And this is certainly no place for humans.
During her family's move to the suburbs, a sullen 10-year-old girl wanders into a world ruled by gods, witches, and spirits, and where humans are changed into beasts. By all means, you can read it.
Do you want to read it?
No, you did a great job.
Nope.
2001, Spirited Away. This was my choice because I own it, and I have yet to watch it.
How long have you owned this film, by the way? Or a copy of it, really?
Since 2002.
No, I got the Hayao Miyazaki collection on Amazon.
Since 2003.
Guys, blast from the past.
The Blu-ray.
When this movie came out, it's one of my first anime features that got me into the anime genres. Or that whole Japanese media stuff. I saw it in theaters, and it was one of the weirdest times where that same month it came out on DVD. That same month or week. And I went out and bought it at Suncoast Video in 2001.
Sweet.
I bought this on July 2016.
And it came with a poster that I still have today. So, you've seen that poster.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. So, it came with... back then they gave movies and trinkets with, movie stuff.
Remember you could pre-order movies?
Yeah, that's true. You could do that. I mean, you could do that now. On iTunes and shit. Yeah, anyway,
Suncoast really wanted you to pre-order movies.
Yeah, they did. And I did a lot of times because, I'm a movie guy. So, anyway. So, okay, so I have to ask you, Luke, before Spirit Away,
right.
What's your what's your interest or knowledge of Miyazaki films?
The first Miyazaki movie I saw was
Spirited
Princess
Away.
Mononoke.
All right.
Then I believe the only one after that I saw was Ponyo.
Dude, that big of a gap?
That big of a gap.
Wow, and is that the time we saw it at Sean's house? Or
that don't even count that time.
Movie was I've never seen Ponyo. To shreds.
I've never seen Ponyo.
No, we didn't tear it to shreds. We just weren't paying attention. We were just terrible.
We ripped it to shreds.
It was terrible, bro. I hated that evening.
And then I saw The Wind Rises.
Worst evening ever.
Oh, yeah, we reviewed it on the old show. That's why.
Yes.
That's right.
However, yeah. I did just watch My Neighbor Totoro.
Recently.
Before this.
Right, we'll talk
but
about
I
more.
But I couldn't talk about it.
We'll talk about all his movies later on. But his catalog is pretty hefty, and they're hefty in...
but I couldn't talk about it.
He's done a lot of short films. He's been in the game since the 70s, 80s. He's done movies like Castle in the Sky, Kiki's Delivery Service, Porco Rosso. He said, Mononoke, Howl's Moving Castle, Ponyo, The Wind Rises, Spirit Away, Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. I think did he do The Cat Returns? I'm not sure about that one.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, and his son, Goro Miyazaki, has done a bunch of other movies as well. He wrote for one of his movies, the one on Poppy Hill. I forgot the title.
From Up on Poppy Hill.
That one. I think he wrote that one and his son directed it, for example. So he's been in the game for a while and very well known and respected. There's a documentary. It might be on Netflix called, oh my God, what is that movie? The documentary about him and Studio Ghibli. Do you remember? We saw it. Fuck. I don't remember. Anyway, there's a documentary. Fuck. Just fucking find it. I've seen all of his films. I started with Spirited Away in 2001, and then from there it grew. And I saw it like little by little, his other films. And then my friend 3 years ago gave me his DVD box set of all the Ghibli films, not just Miyazaki. And I was able to watch all of them. So I've seen a lot of them now. So, Ralph, what's your interest in the man?
My interest... Go ahead, Luke. Go ahead.
The documentary is called The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to remember that.
It is, yeah.
Right. It just rolls off the tongue. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Rolls right off. Because you have to look at the screen the whole time when you read that. anyways, I started off just like Luke did. Princess Mononoke is my intro to the series. And then right after, I would say... I want to say Spirited Away, then Howl's Moving Castle, but I might be wrong about that. It might have been Howl's first, but I'm pretty sure it was what's it called, Spirited Away.
Yeah.
I remember Spirited Away very vividly because I never thought that. At first, I never thought it was Hayao Miyazaki, actually, because I think I saw it in theaters with you, Oscar.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, we can do this, like, animation wise. Like, this was amazing. And then I was like, oh, it's from Japan. Like, of course it is. And then I was like, let me just delve in further into this anime world for me. And
yep, so that was for same me. Man too.
Sure. And I've seen a lot of his works. I haven't seen everything. I haven't seen a lot of his older ones. I haven't seen Pocoroso, for example.
It's like his Indiana Jones.
Yeah, which, I mean, that sounds cool.
Yeah,
because I like Indiana Jones.
That's fun.
I've seen Kiki's Delivery Service. I've seen just about everything else, basically. I'm a huge fan. So I just about like every movie. Obviously, there's degrees of how much I like a movie of his. But I love his style. That's his artistic style and just his artistic point of view, really. I always find something I can like about a movie, even if I don't like the movie in itself.
Gotcha. All right. So without further ado now, finally, after all that preamble, Luke, what did you think of Spirited Away, your first time?
I am...
Did we read the description? We did earlier.
Yes, Ralph. So
did Ralph read the description? Nope.
Yes, he did.
All right.
You want to read it again?
No.
Okay.
Quite all right. I was shocked to see how amazing this movie was.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's nice.
I honestly, when I looked,
you were shocked.
Yes, when I looked back at the thing, I was like, 2001. You got to be bullshitting me. There's no way this thing came out in 2001.
Oh, in the quality sense.
Oh my God, yeah, the quality, everything was just amazing.
Yeah, well, it was very, very neatly transferred by Disney as well over here. So a lot of copies.
Had that Disney money.
Yeah, and also got the voiceover actors to do a better than usual job when it comes to subs, dubs in anime, right?
Yeah.
So, that's nice. That's cool. Surprised you were surprised because I'm sure there's other examples.
I've heard it was great. I know and all that fun jazz, but I've never actually seen it. I've seen clips of it being used and like different mashups and things of that nature.
That makes sense.
But it was only a clip. But oh my God, this movie was probably way ahead of its time.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
And I think I was surprised because I think Princess Mononoke came out before this.
Right. It came out in 1998.
And I thought Princess Mononoke came out after it because of its use of CGI. So I was kind of surprised by that.
You think it was... So even Mononoke is probably ahead of its time, but you thought it was...
No, that's the reason I kind of hated Mononoke.
Oh, you didn't like Mononoke? I don't know.
Just because of that CGI aspect.
Well, we can't blame a movie for that.
Yeah, I can.
No, you can't.
And I did.
You can't. That's stupid.
Done deal.
No, you can't. That's a stupid reason. It's like blaming...
It didn't fit.
1800s for not having phones.
I do blame them for that.
Yeah. No, that's stupid.
They're stupid for not coming up with it.
Yeah, how many things they could have prevented?
I hate everybody.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, though. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly, yeah.
So what did you think of the movie?
It was amazing.
Besides thinking that it came out in a different year?
In all aspects, I liked the plot, I liked everything. It was really good.
Specifically? Like, what's your favorite one?
Well, what stood out for you? Like, what stands out for you right now? What's the first thing that pops in? And when you say about
the guy in the boiler room.
Okay. Kamaji?
Yeah.
Yeah. His Goro-like arms?
Yes, and legs and all the limbs and stuff.
Just skinnier?
Or like Goro and name, Dalsim.
Or like a spider, together, like a human spider,
like
right?
A human spider.
Because, at first I'm like, oh, he's probably just a normal old man working in the boiler room. And he's got some pretty crazy long limbs and extra limbs. And okay, just going to go with it.
And he produces a lot of water pretty fast.
What?
He produces a lot of water for the bath.
Oh, my sure. Yeah. Yeah. He's got to deal with all those requests at the same time.
It's impossible. 3 bath tokens at once.
4 bath tokens.
Oh, did he say 4?
Yeah, okay. I think it was 4 bath tokens. Okay.
Well, I've seen this movie like, this is probably my, this viewing was my 15th time probably. That's how much I've seen this movie. It is wholly, wholly beloved. It is my, my number one, maybe my number two of all his, Miyazaki films. Close two would be With the Wind Rises. I really fell in love with that movie. Not to say that the rest are not bad, or bad or horrible. They're not. They're not. His worst movie I would watch over and over again. So,
which would be
for me is like, well, the one that's like easier to pass by is Porco Rosso, but we'll talk about his movies later. But Kiki's Delivery Service, I can see that over and over again. I can see My Neighbor Totoro 75 times
in a row.
In a row, sure. So yeah, Spirited Away. I love it because it does a very it's one of his it does a very good job of introducing, but never explaining a world that can never be explained. And in the eyes of
well,
this main,
not in a feature-length movie.
Not in a feature-length movie. You need like an encyclopedia to explain like every aspect of this because it's so full of detail that you cannot even begin to like even. Which I know it could be bad. Like I can see it really, especially American audiences, because we tend to be a lot more left brain on what makes sense or what should make sense or what should not make sense in a movie or in the logic of a movie. But I don't know. Like I was surprised back then even how my suspension of disbelief didn't ever shatter watching this movie. Her parents turned into pigs and I was fine with it. I was actually kind of frightened a little bit because the imagery was a little frightening. It wasn't, not everything is as peach or as PG as you might think. Not that there's anything, I mean, there's blood in it too, I guess. But there's not like horrific scenes or anything particular. But there are horrifying images. So this movie is surprisingly all over the place in the world setting, but it works out for me because I never need anything explained. Everything makes sense because it makes sense emotionally first and foremost for the main character and for, I guess, Haku as well and Yubaba and so on. And then it proceeds to, like, you know, make sense later on thematically by the end of the movie. And then you feel like you've been in this world as much as a character, the people who live in it, right? By the end of the movie, I don't know if you felt that way, but for me, the first time, I remember feeling that I feel like I've lived in this world for a while, and even though I still have no idea how anything works, how a rain makes a sea, or trains work on water, or any of this stuff.
Black magic, bro.
Black magic, right? Even though I don't understand any of that, I feel like I understand it at the same time. So, Ralph, what do you think of the movie?
Yeah, I have this feeling. I have this same kind of feeling that you have. I really enjoyed this movie. It's my first viewing in Japanese.
That's right.
I saw this movie in English maybe like 4 times already. So I think this is one of the movies that if I ever showed anything about Hayao Miyazaki, it's usually Spirited Away. Just because it's more, I think it's not a good introductory level, but it would be for people who aren't fans of anime or fans of anything animated, really. I think this is an easier thing to use or ease into. But what I was saying about, I agree with you with that feeling. It's a feeling of like being a child, though. When you're a child, when you're 5, 6, 4, whatever, all those ages, younger, you're in a world that you don't understand either. Right. And everything just works, right? You can't, you know, you'll eventually learn it because you have to, right? As you traverse it, as you, you know, experience things through it. And it's the same thing that's happening in this. We're just seeing it in our age. That's the only difference. She just happens to walk into this world for the first time ever. And she just has to live through it because it has to happen, right? And going in through it with the eyes of a child, it was 2001, so I'm still young at this point when I saw this movie. So maybe I saw it 2002, 2001, whenever it came out for us.
Yeah.
I was maybe just entering high school, or about to enter high school. So I'm still that very child minded at this point. I'm not growing up at any point soon. So I definitely went in there and with amazement, and I never had the problem of like, why isn't this explained? Why isn't that explained that we have in general, like you said, American audiences? But which I kind of really enjoyed because I think the movie just does a great job of there's a world there and like it doesn't need to be explained because, hey, nothing is explained in the real world to you anyway, unless if you go figure it out or, you know, unless if things start getting explained to you by somebody, right? And the only thing she needs to know is what needs to be done at work. Which is
that's
what you, exactly. So it's a really cool thing. And I want to say, like, man, those visuals, I just really love the artistic, like, how everything's hand-drawn, how everything it feels. I agree. I actually still felt very, what's it called? Not scared, but a sense of, like, you know, quick, like, little jolt when I saw the parents turn into pigs. Because it's very...
Or Haku in dragon form dying from the paper cuts.
Right. It's a very interesting... It's not something that you normally would see, you know? Right. We would be very like, oh, no, you need to
That blood or the baby threatening to break her arm.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Any little things like that, yeah, it is a little bit more graphic. And I really like it. I really like, like I said, I've always enjoyed his style. So it's a really good, one of my favorite movies of Hayao Miyazaki.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all love this movie. So I can't say anything else about it. I'm just kind of like looking at some of the inspirational stuff that Hayao Miyazaki drew from.
And there's also like a lot of... little things that he correlates, like there's
I like some of the stuff I saw, because after I saw Totoro, I was like, hey, that little thing looks like it was from Totoro, and like, yeah, the other little thing, I'm like, oh, okay.
There's one scene that reminds me of Mononoke a lot too, the little tree spirits or whatever from that movie. There's like a scene where they're in the background or they're like passing by in a way. So there's like a lot of those little things.
Yes. Like the whole Yababa thing also with not Kiki's Delivery Service, but Howl's Moving Castle.
That's right. That old woman.
Exactly.
That
very similar.
Embodies a little girl.
Very similar.
Oh, I thought that Yubaba was also from Totoro because they also had like this granny.
There's that too.
And probably all connected.
Like, it's very similar, right, like, right. Designs. Yeah.
So I think about every time I watch this movie, I always notice something different. And this time around, I noticed what I noticed differently is that, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, is that. You know, the idea of not understanding this world is similar to a child never understanding the world they're in until they get older. And I'm wondering if this world actually makes perfect sense, except that she is just too young to know yet, and we're just watching it through her point of view. And, like, it makes this nonsense, it's all nonsense, because she's seeing it as all nonsense, rather than, like, if we were adults walking into that amusement park or bathhouse, we would see it as making sense, you know? Like, does no face make sense to you? Yeah, I mean, I don't think No Face.
I know what. Oh, well, No Face is
right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about him.
That's another good question. Yes,
who the fuck was No Face? I mean, he is like. I mean, he's kind of the embodiment of sin and gluttony a little bit, but also
loneliness.
But he's not. He's also not. Like, there's a lot of compassion in this movie. There's no one. The most villainous character is not treated wrong or not treated to be. Dealt with in a negative way, you know, like, I guess Yubaba would be the main villain, right?
Sure.
And for a while, it's a little bit of Haku because of his mystery, and you don't know what he's up to because he's also, like, you know, stealing fucking emeralds from people. And then No Face by the middle, I guess, but when he's turning fat and huge, sure. And shit, mm-hmm. And he's a toad. But they all come back, you know, so, like, if he actually ate them for real and they never came back, then, you know, that would be too... you can't redeem him from that. So yeah, there's like a lot of things like that, and I noticed that this movie is it's about love in every way possible except romantic love, you know?
Right.
It might have
a little romantic with her and Haku.
No, very. No, no,
she's,
I don't,
like,
think so.
10 or 11.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Literally, that 11 the highest she is. I also like how she is so afraid. And selfish about everything in the beginning. And by the end, she is so confident and sure. She's willing to, you know, run that pipe that she's afraid to run because it's going to break down on her someone.
That scene when she's just getting into the
bathhouse.
The bathhouse. The backside. Yeah, going down the stairs. I mean, there's like a whole little vertigo scene.
Yeah, there is. And I like how they show it.
Yeah, exactly.
The intensity of it,
right,
for her.
I mean, they even do a pullback or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So like, and it's interesting. Like, and I mean, I'd be deadly afraid. But it's funny. I always thought about this when she's doing it. Is like the safer, and I do air quotes, as that we think we're doing something, in reality is kind of hurting us, because like that's not how we normally would do it at things anyway. So why is that? How is that safer? You going super slow and super
right
going down, like, that's, you don't do that normally. Why do you think is that safer than you normally walking down something?
And I like how everything has a weird little consequence. Like, she never would have had to. find the job theoretically if she held her breath throughout the bridge scene.
Right.
Because after that, they're looking for her and they're looking for Haku to look for her. And because of that, she has to find a job and we're going from there. And the whole idea of stealing your name, which is maybe more of a Japanese lore thing. I'm not understanding that 100%. But the whole point is that your name is attached to your memory of yourself. So that's an interesting idea, too, like about thematically.
Well, she forgot almost immediately.
There's a lot of talk. And also, this movie is a lot of, like all his movies, I think, most of his movies anyway, Miyazaki, there's a lot of environmental talk, too. Like the idea that that river spirit was thought to be a stink spirit because he's so polluted. And that he has to be saved in this spiritual bathhouse to be cleansed and be a spirit again and be a full river. That says something about the humans out there wasting their throwing their shit in his river, you know? And that's something about the environment. Haku, the very nature of Haku, the fact that he doesn't know who he is because they tore that river down and put, what, apartments or something, she said?
Yeah, I think something kind of
like that whole thing, it's very environmental.
They put up a parking
lot. Eco-aware. And Miyazaki has always been aware of that. All his movies have that. And we'll see a lot more in his next movie we'll review here. But that's really it, all I have on Spirited Away. I feel like I've always talked about this movie, even though it's the first time on here, obviously, that I've talked about it.
Right.
But I would love to hear more from you guys. Please send feedback on anything to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Don't forget. Anything else, guys, on this movie?
No, I think you hit it dead on with what's our main character's name?
Chihiro.
Or Sen. Yeah, I was thinking, like, isn't it Sen? I already forgot her name. Fuck, I'm dead.
Yeah,
she's dead in this world, guys.
She's dead.
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right where she's this spoiled little brat, you know, city girl or whatever, who just, you know, got her everything in her own way, and then learns the consequences of, you know, things that you need to do, you need to do things to get things, right? And then grows up, becomes more fearless, I suppose, more sure of herself.
There's something oddly universal in how weird this movie is. Like, it's weird for every culture, so sure. We're all equally weird in it and normal at the same time. Yeah. I don't know. It's weird to explain. Does that make sense? Universal?
It is. What's also really cool is, like, and like you brought this up earlier, is that not everything is black and white. Like, she's not just a villain. Like, you know, Yubaba is not just a villain. This guy is obviously, what's called Haku is not the villain as well. Or there's no bad guy. Even No Face isn't a bad guy per se. Like, everybody has their own struggles. Everybody has their own problems. Not everybody is good or bad. You're a little bit of both, right? Right. Even our heroine, if you want to look at her that way, she's a bitch in the beginning, right? She's
little brat.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then she has to work through it. Like, she has to be taught respect. And that's what she kind of learns in this journey.
Yeah, by the time she meets No Face in that final conversation between them two, she's like fully
right, exactly.
Zen about everything.
Right, yeah, very, very zen about it.
He's like, dude, you got to get out of here. This place is a sickness to you.
Exactly. So there's like there's that thing, you know. Yeah. And that's you find out that, yeah, and then whoever you think, Yobaba's grandma or whatever.
As a neighbor.
Exactly. Like, you think she's her villain.
Right.
But she's good to somebody else, right? And it's like, that's what the whole thing is. It's not your typical... not your typical that there's an evil person and it's evil to everybody and it's only evil.
Everyone's a little evil.
Right, that you're used to in with a Disney movie, for example.
True.
So like that. But also, I want to say the voice acting in English is great. I never had any problems listening to this.
Yeah.
Disney does a great job overall. And the Japanese isn't bad either, even though I started off with an English. Usually I don't like one or the other once I listen to the first. They were good. Everything worked out. So.
I mean, they're screwed, though, at the end when they get out because it's been 2 days and the parents don't know it's been 2 days. And
for sure. Yeah.
They're like, we got to get to the movers in time. I'm like, no, they fucking left them.
Yeah, they jacked your shit because you didn't pay them.
The whole place is on fire and looted. So that's Spirited Away.
You guys have notes.
Yeah, they're all fucked up. Spirited Away. Check it out. I don't know where it's available. I know it's available to buy and rent anywhere, but I don't know if it's available.
I don't think it's anywhere else like that.
I don't think so either.
I think you got to shell out some coins for this one.
Or pirate it, I guess. But don't, because this movie is worth buying. Blind buy if you've ever heard of it. Anyway, so
yeah, they do it all the time. It's great.
Yeah, yes, you do. And years later, you watch it and you never review it for the show. Anyway, so that's it for Spirited Away. When we come back, we'll review his Miyazaki's one of his earlier pictures from the 80s, called Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. So stay with us.
Lord Yupa.
Nausicaa, I didn't recognize you.
It's been over a year now. It's great to see you.
Thank you for helping me with that Orm. You've certainly mastered that glider of yours.
You think so? Father says I have a long way to...
Oh, yes. I forgot all about this little fellow. He's the reason I got in trouble with the Orm.
Wow. Is that a fox squirrel? I've never seen one.
I hadn't either. I saw an insect carrying him off, and I mistook him for a human baby. I had no choice but to use my gun.
Oh, so that's why the Orm was so angry with you.
He's quite spirited. Apparently he didn't inhale too much of the jungle's poison. Better not touch him. Even the babies are vicious.
Come on. It's okay.
Careful.
Princess Nausicaa and her people must try to save what's left of the Earth from warring kingdoms and an ancient weapon, 1,000 years in the future. Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, directed by Hayao Miyazaki, and writers, of course, main writing, Hayao Miyazaki. Okay, so this is a 1984 film, so it's obviously, this is not his first, right?
No, I think he did Castle in the Sky before. Castle in the Sky? Okay. I'm not 100%.
I think Castle in the Sky was 1986.
Well, somebody will figure it out. Sure. So this is a movie, obviously the animation does feel a lot more dated, even when I saw it.
It's of its time.
It's of its time, exactly. Well, that's what I mean dated, but it's still good. It still is done well in its time, and it holds up.
No, it's not your fault. It's just weird that when I hear the word dated... It has like a negative connotation to it.
Well, I don't see
it. When it just means literally that, oh, it's from a different time.
Yeah, sure.
I know that you're saying it that way. I just want to make sure that people, listeners out there, know we're not trying to diminish it.
Yeah.
At least you're not.
No, what's funny is that I use it both ways, though. So
dated as fuck.
See, he's using it the negative way,
for sure. Like, that's
He's basically an anime racist.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is, right?
He's calling anime's color.
Anime elitist. Anime elitist.
No,
worse. No, he's an elitist because he wouldn't play a game like, for example, a video game that's from all the way back this because it looks bad, you know, but he'll play the HD remake because it's a better version, even though it's
the game. I see what you mean. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Elitist. I mean, clarify me if I'm wrong, please.
I think the elitist would be the opposite.
You kind of proved that earlier today already.
Would you think that?
Yeah, like, why? I played Final Fantasy, the original Japanese version.
I said the animated elitist. As in, like, the animation elitist.
But I think they would still prefer the
original. No, I think you're wrong. I think I'm right about this.
No.
I think either way, you're wrong is what we're saying.
Shut your dirty poor mouth. We're arguing here.
Yeah, this is a place for arguing. Actually, sure. This is the place for debating. So, Rob, this is your first viewing, right? You chose this one?
This is not my first viewing.
Oh, I thought it was your first.
No. It is my first.
It is his first.
Oh, I know it's your first. You didn't see anything.
No, I chose this. I saw this a while back.
Oh, no, I thought you picked it because you hadn't seen it.
No, I picked it because I had seen it. Because I actually did pick a movie that I saw.
The original actual way to
Right, exactly,
it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Gotcha. Okay, my mistake then. Second time?
Yes, second viewing.
Second viewing. I definitely do have a lot of things to say about this movie. It's going to be fun. So, you chose it. So, what did you think?
You talk about Spirited Away and this world that we're in. Let's talk about this movie and this world we're throwing in. Obviously, the movie does a lot better job and it's not as confusing as what world we're in. It's in the future.
No. Yeah.
It's in the future. Shit happens.
As adults.
Right. There's a lot of stuff going on. We get it. It's a very pacifist act. What's it called? You can tell this movie is so obviously I like this movie. Let's go with that route real quick. It's a very pacifist route of this Nausicaa, our heroine in this movie, who wants nothing bad to happen to any side, right? Like, we can both prosper. Let's just do that, guys. Like, let's both live, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about basically nature versus humans, right? And it's this weird thing that nobody gets except for her in the Valley of the Wind. Everybody in her, or her people, her like 20 people. And I say 20 because it's a little bit more, but not that much.
Maybe like a couple hundred or something.
Sure, right, exactly. Yeah. It's a small town in comparison to kingdoms that come after. Or
was it the Pedgite and...
oh, fuck, I already forgot.
Latimer's something.
The Pedgite and the... I'm pretty sure I'll remember the Tolmikian.
Tolmikian. Wow, yeah, wait.
Tolmikian. Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of like the Tolkiens, but the Tolmikians. So yeah, there's what's it called? I feel this movie so influenced by aftermath of Hiroshima.
Definitely.
I mean, I see it so well in this movie. It's and you can tell, like, hey, like, we wouldn't want this to happen. And they're living in a world where it almost kind of did happen, or maybe it did.
And let's not forget Nagasaki, too.
Right, exactly. Let's not forget Nagasaki. But, like, there's a lot. It's like this whole crazy thing of the aftermath of that and what could have happened, or what crazy things came and what influences them. And this is what influenced Hayao Miyazaki. And it's really interesting. It's a really interesting concept of what's going on. I like the story overall. I do feel like this character has to be, like, the one person, but I don't hate it because it doesn't hold it too down for me. I still find it fine. It's a 1984 film. It's not like, you know, I don't feel like it's pressured, like, now to do something different. I'll let it.
Oh, you mean to have it rest on all her shoulders?
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay. I feel like, you know, it's a very magical, like, that Disney type of movie where it's like everything relies on this one, only one person fits the shoe, you know, and all this kind of stuff. That's how I feel anyways. But, yeah, I don't want to talk more about it until we get a little bit later. Oscar, what did you think?
Well, I love this movie. It's always been like a 5 out of 5 for me.
Okay.
Star-wise. Yeah, so, and this is my third or, no, like my fourth viewing. And it is the quintessential, one of those quintessential movies that about art imitating life. In the same way that maybe like a movie like The Iron Giant, inspired by not only Superman, but also the Cold War, right?
And, right, yeah,
and
sure.
That's more of the threat of nuclear war, whereas this one is more active.
Oh, for sure.
Nausicaa, yeah. I mean. And it makes sense, you know, given the heritage of Japan. And this kind of recent, Hayao Miyazaki, I'm not saying he was around, but he was around that age. I mean, he definitely grew up hearing stories.
Sure. You
know, at least. Because he's an old man now, for sure. He's been around the game. So, yeah. So, Nausicaa is definitely an amalgamation of that. But also, it's always going to be, this movie is always going to be important in what it's trying to say. Because, I mean, some people would say more so today. It's not really more so, but we are, you know, all this talk about the global warming stuff and, you know, how we're just threatening the world and never endingly, and it's not, you know, no one's doing anything enough about it to fix it. There's a part 2 to Inconvenient Truth, by the way. Did you see that trailer? It reminded me of that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see the trailer, but I saw something post about it, yeah.
Yeah, did you see that trailer, Luke? You know there's a part 2?
To no.
A sequel to Inconvenient Truth? I forgot the name of it.
Oh, you know what?
It's like a play on words. I saw it in the trailer for one of the movies. So.
Yeah, I think there is, but
I think Velocity is the yes,
I don't think I saw the first one anyway, so wouldn't know.
You know what? I haven't seen the first one either.
It's funny. Although I think it was like free on iTunes one day, so I was like, oh, okay, I'll grab it, and I still get to watch.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Me too. That's sad. Anyway.
Even free.
Even
free. A free documentary.
But Nausicaa, I've seen 4 times. Anyway, so I like how Nausicaa takes a very... So I mean, it's funny how the science of Nausicaa, of the Valley of the Wind, which of course is made up, but it's also, it's extravagant and it's out there and it looks like, it does not look like Earth.
No, it really doesn't.
Very few things look like Earth. The rocks look like Earth. That's it. The rest is not. The trees don't look like Earth. The sky doesn't look like Earth, really.
Sure.
The clouds are horrible things to pass through. The clouds are terrible things.
Right.
They're like marshmallows full of shitty fucking thunderstorms. It's an awful place. It's an awful, dangerous place. And I love how it has humbled humanity to a certain point to put it down to its knees, but at the same time has created a lot of desperate acts that, A, don't make sense, and B, lead to horrible situations that could threaten the actual rest of the world. And it's funny because the movie treats the saving of humanity the same way, exact same way, maybe even less so than it does that treating to save the world, because they're two different things. Because you can save the Earth and not humanity.
Yes, that's true.
And then, but you can kill all of humanity. Actually, you should kill all of humanity. The movie kind of doesn't say should, but it, you know, clearly.
Well, the movie clearly says we're the toxic ones
here. Yeah, we're fucking it up.
Right.
Yeah. Like, so this movie has a lot to say, right, and well, I think
everything thrives in this toxic environment, not us.
Not to say that there isn't some problems. I think it has some exposition problems, and I don't know if this is the transfer of the dubbed version, which I've seen, or I never seen the Japanese original subtitled version. So I mean, they're also not that different. I think the dialogue will be pretty much the same. It felt kind of clunky, how they introduced themselves and how she would start explaining to herself some things, like exposition, like you don't need. So, like, clearly he became a better writer, I think, as the years went on from that point. But other than that, I think, which is a small hiccup for me in the beginning, like, every character stays exactly true to them. There's talk, like, there's, like, futuristic folklore and legends that exist then that are kind of like fingerprints to humanities of our own legendary people and heroes and warriors. There's a lot of great things about all that stuff. It has a rich history that you don't know about, of course, or very little.
Right.
I don't know. I love this movie.
Cool. Luke, what did you think?
This was my first viewing, and it shall probably be my only viewing of this movie.
Sadly.
Clearly. I disagree. I hated this movie. I thought it was...
Hate?
Boring. I didn't like the plot. I didn't like the characters. The animation was subpar. I mean, come on. Elitist. They could have done so much better.
Elitist.
Well, I mean, I've seen stuff come out in like, what? Like, what year did Snow White come out? I think that trumps it.
In terms of what?
Animation, it felt like everything.
Wait, really? No,
else.
No way. Watch both comparatively. No one's
it
way
like,
better than the other. It's not.
I expected that this movie should have been so much better, but it was like everything other, like everything else that was turned out in the 80s. Crap. Oh, crap.
Okay.
Yeah. And I hated the whole hippie shit. And those ohms are so stupid looking. Those things aren't scary. They're just big and stupid. Hated it.
But why?
I didn't like it.
But why?
Because I... Personal preference.
No, but you have to give me reasons. Like, okay. Just because something looks stupid, doesn't. I mean, they show you literally these things tearing down cities, right?
Good.
You know,
them all.
You know it's threat. So what's the problem with that?
It's a stupid creature.
Why is it stupid?
Because it doesn't look remotely scary. It's just stupid. And, oh, it's big and it has eyes and it goes red.
Why does it have to look scary? They're threatening. I never said they look scary. I never agreed to that. I don't think they're scary either.
Well, everyone in the movie thought they were, so.
Well, yeah, they're scared of it. If you live in that world, you'd be scared of them. Trust me. You would be scared of them.
No.
Yep. Trust me. Nope. And I went, yep.
They're stupid. Don't like it.
You don't make any sense.
Well, I have a question. Like, what did you? How's the things that we just talked about? Like, do you see the inspiration of the story of what, like, where this like world is from Hiroshima? Or, like, those nuclear bombs?
No,
you don't see that at all.
Didn't see it.
You don't see why it would come out. Like, why this story was even exists to begin with?
No,
really. Like, you don't catch any of that.
Didn't think of it once.
So what didn't attract you?
The only thing I thought was like, oh, it's some hippie crap. You know, don't pollute the planet.
So you thought, like, Captain Planet style, like, don't believe the planet shit like that? Because you could, like... you thought, like, kind of, like, times of now, more than you're saying?
Probably.
I guess.
I'm pretty sure, you know, because, you know, Japan was really big into manufacturing back in the day. I'm sure they thought about that, too, so...
Yeah, probably.
They thought of what?
The environmental aspect when, you know, Japan was, like, really big
Everyone
into manufacturing.
Everyone should be thinking about that.
Sure, yeah. No, of course they are. But I mean, I think it's a bigger
thing.
Well, no.
Movie,
what I'm saying is that there's a big difference between us thinking about an environment thing when we have a big ass country compared to a Japan.
But also, this is not a surprising thing, especially if Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, while it's Miyazaki's first, one of his first maybe, feature of length films, it is like at least our third introduction to the man, fourth, fifth, probably.
Sure.
I mean, it was probably my fourth or fifth movie I've seen of his. After Mononoke, Spirited, Kiki's Delivery Service, and as we mentioned in Spirited, and I think I can come up with other examples in his other movies, he does hold the environment or the world or nature or the taking caring of nature as a high thing. Princess Mononoke, half of the plot is that. Not half of the plot, but like it's all about the start of the industrial age, right? And guns are a new thing, and it's harming not just the environment, but it's harming like this way of life that doesn't feel wrong, right? I don't know if you've seen it recently, but that's what
it's been.
That's
while.
His nature,
that's know,
okay. among curses and other things too in the movie. But it has that going for it. So he is. It's no surprise to expect this from the guy. So like I never expected that to be a surprise for anyone if you've seen any of his movies. But again, maybe that's me. One thing I gotta say about this, she's like, Nausicaa. I like how she's the, I mean, not she's, I don't want to say she's the only one, she's portrayed to be the only one, but she has this, like, this big picture kind of thinking that no one in the movie seems to have.
Right, everybody's and really short-minded here. Yeah.
Very short-minded. Even the, it's funny, the more powerful the kingdom is, the more short-sighted you are.
Yeah, sure.
Because the, what were they called? The Colmanites? No.
The Tomikians?
Tomikians. Wow.
And the Pejite. Yeah.
So, well, the, like, the Pejite are clearly the ones that are being ruled, that are being pulled under their thumb. They're still bigger than Valley of the Wind. But they're definitely secondary to the Tomikians. And the Tomikians are the ones that always are the most bullheaded, the ones with the bigger armor, the ones, you know, and the Pejites are always the rebels fighting. It's like the rebels in Star Wars, I guess you would say. They're the ones that are always in opposition, the resistance. They're always like, you know, guerrilla warfare styling them away, right? It felt like that to me. And you can see it because it only sent one fighter to kill three big starships. Yeah, it's all very interesting. And if you really pay attention to the inner workings of these militaries, I guess you would call them.
Yeah.
And people overall.
All these forces.
Is that they're civilians, quote-unquote, the non-military types of all these towns. They're all the same. It's just who they decide dictates who rules them is the actual difference between one kingdom and the other. And I thought that was kind of interesting and fascinating.
You mean how, like, we're all humans, but we dictate who rules us?
Yeah, I mean, we do, and yet we don't.
Sure.
Right, who can say? I'm not saying just about political climates today.
Sure, sure, here. Sure.
I'm saying in general.
Just, you know, I get where you're going, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's very interesting. And Luke is an insane person. I don't understand what he's coming from. But I love the idea that all this fallout from insane radiation from more than 1,000 years ago. They talk about the 7 days of hell 1,000 years ago. That's probably when nuclear warfare happened.
Right, exactly.
But who can say that it was 1940-something either? Right?
Sure.
It's still 1,000 years after that.
Exactly.
So it's a way distant future, and this radiation has caused, like, these insane beasts, which makes sense. And I'm not just saying in a Godzilla sense, because Godzilla's about that, guys, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Godzilla's
true.
A gigantic monster created by radiation and all this problem.
Right.
And Mothra. So, like, this makes perfect sense to me. I really didn't mind either which way on the thing. I mean, the only, if anything, was probably too simplistic in the fact that, you know, red means anger, blue means calm, and nothing means they're asleep, I guess.
That is very, yeah.
But that's this is simplistic. Also kind of a children's film. So,
yeah. And actually, this movie, I just kind of looked it up. He worked on other stuff, but this is his breakout movie for...
oh, he is? It is?
Yeah, this is his breakout movie for what's it called? For Studio Ghibli.
Oh, okay.
So he worked on other stuff before.
Right.
A lot of other stuff. He worked with a lot of companies who are gigantic companies now, like Toei Animation, for example.
Okay.
He did a lot of work beforehand. But this is his first, like, Studio Ghibli kickstart kind of thing.
Nice. And then from here...
I believe it's Ghibli.
Yeah.
Ghibli. I don't know.
Ghibli.
Ghibli.
Ghibli. The H is G-H, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really love that stuff, and I love the attention to detail about that stuff, and... I don't know. A lot of this, I love the little. Also, it has a great sense of adventure with the hang glider. Anything with her on the hang glider, I loved.
Yeah, that's true. That's the good stuff.
It was a little over convenient how she was managed to dodge a lot of bullets when she looked like she shouldn't have, but that's okay. Again, quibbles on that.
Right. Well, actually, one of the things that I hate about this movie, and I told this to Luke when we were watching it, because it had not been my first time, and I remember I didn't. Hated as much the first viewing, but the second viewing I did hate it a little bit more. Is this warrior, this weapon, like?
Oh, yeah.
It's just the stupidest thing ever. Like, I never got that. That's like one thing in the camp of, like, bad for this movie. I never got.
Oh.
They go into some explanation where, like, we found it somewhere, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, but how do you even begin to research things like that? How do you even begin to, like where is the thought of, like,
well, the whole point
growing
is that,
it, and how do you even grow it?
It's like man's fallacy to... I'm not saying creating the weapon, because that happened a long time ago.
Like creating Godzilla?
Yeah, it's a Godzilla, basically.
Sure.
They were trying to release Godzilla, but it's like... what I loved about it more this time around is because, like, cause I thought the same thing. Like, oh, okay, it's just like a weird thing that died off by itself. No. It makes sense because... Because they rushed it. The whole idea of the impatience of it.
I'm not talking about like how it happens. Get that. That's a cool part for me that it's rushed. The shit.
You mean
breaks
the fact
down.
That it
the
exists?
The fact it exists. Yes.
Wait, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it is just like it's
there just to be there.
It's like convenient. There. Right. It's there for like a convenience of like us having this nuclear force.
Without the weapon, there's no plot.
Well, that's the thing. Like, right. Well, it just feels very like.
Or did you guys want something
else? Without the weapon, there might be actually a better plot. Just to have a weapon.
Well, it just felt like this weapon thing, right? Which they just get into it, this warrior thing that these two nations are fighting over, or these two kingdoms are fighting over, right? What's it called? They like, how do they know what to do with this thing? How do they know it's something that needs to grow? Like, and I'm not saying the movie needs to explain to you things. Just, so the, my big gripe
it's too
about
much
it,
of a mystery for you,
right? It's not even the mystery.
Drop
thing.
Some science.
It's
bitch.
Just the fact that like they're not they're like I'm not saying that the airplanes aren't like they know how to make that because they found the way to do that, right, or whatever.
Right.
But like yeah. I'm saying, how is this like? How do they know how to do something like this? Or what it even is, like what folklore thing, why has nobody ever heard of it? No one else heard of it except for these two countries or these two, what's it called?
It's possible they've always been looking for it, just found it just recently. Right?
I mean, it doesn't feel like that.
Oh, no, we don't know because we're just following Nausicaa, who wouldn't look for that anyway.
Right, right. And it just like, and also the other, yeah. And I'll go the other aspect is like, why is Nausicaa, or it feels like our heroine, is the only person who ever does research on the toxic jungle? Like to
thank you.
To better improve themselves, right? And I get like this is like the ego, right? Of and I
the reason is she says it is because of she tries to find a cure for her father.
Sure, no, I get that. But
stepped into this.
No,
thing.
I'm not nagging. Right, yeah. I'm not nagging the fact that she did it. That's awesome, right? I'm nagging that. Why hasn't anybody else done that?
Right. It's been like, 1,000 years.
It's been 1,000 years. Like
no one knows science. Is science not a thing now?
No, probably not.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It gets to like we can make.
I don't know.
Cool jet fighter.
You're
things,
right. I don't know enough about this world, but I never thought of it that way because I've always thought these people like too primitive for the technology they have, and yet too what do you call it when you have big head? Egocentric to wield it. You know, like it's like they're both worst of both worlds. They don't understand the science of what they have because it's of days past.
Sure.
But they use it, you know, in a dangerous way. That's why the warrior is sought and then destroyed because they overdo it. I feel like that's all but part of that reason thematically. Maybe you're right. It doesn't make sense. The more you guys talk about the minutia of it, you're right. I don't know how they do that.
Sure.
But I never thought of it.
I just think the people are just too plain. Even like Nausicaa, there's no one really has any depth to them.
In what way? I think she had depth.
Oh, I think out of everybody.
The fox?
It's like a
cool ass fucking thing.
It is like a fox thing. It's like a
fox something.
I forgot what it was.
Land snake.
Yes, the land snake. What is that?
I don't know.
So you just made that up?
Yes.
Okay. The spider fox. Let's call it spider fox. Jolteon. It looks like a Jolteon.
It does look a little bit like a Jolteon.
The Jolteon, like that scene alone says so much because if she's doing it in front of what you find out like a minute later, this legendary warrior Jopin, something like that.
Yeah.
And he is in awe of this young princess, and without much words, she is introducing herself to you as this character of poise, of conviction, of like, pacifism for sure, a way of nature, the way she rides and she knows the wind so well and been able to predict it, as the warrior says after she leaves. Like, I think, I don't know, I think we get so much from her. Right. I mean, there's no romantic angle, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of hint with the boy.
Sure. But I don't get bogged down. I mean, obviously, our main character, and I would say even this, the big swordsman guy, are probably the ones who have the most depth.
Yeah, movie. After that, they get pretty two-dimensional.
It gets pretty, right. Pretty watered down. And I'm not...
Like, there's some nice caricatures of the people trying to steal the tanks from the enemy.
Right, exactly.
They're kind of funny, but then I like...
Sure, right. But I do agree with you there. And I'm not super bogged down like Lucas, where he immediately chimed in the moment I said there was something wrong in the movie. It's about that. I bring it up because it bothers me that like something like that, that's almost like a throwaway line, a throwaway thing, that she done the research, right? And nobody else has. And nobody cares to put into it. But at the same time, I get it because it is even bring it up in our times now. Like, we cut funding for everything. Or we're cutting funding for everything because we don't want to research it. Or we don't want to put it into our effort.
I don't know. I guess I'm more free to see something like this as, like, for most of history of humanity, it's always been this way.
Right.
It's like we're living in a very privileged age where people are research... And science and discovery is so important.
Oh, I agree with you, but I'm saying it does bother. What I'm bringing up to you is that it's not that the movie bothers me about it. I'm saying what it bothered me when I watched it.
Right.
Like I know, and that's what I'm saying.
It's a legit thing. I just never thought.
Sure. Right.
No, it's a legit complaint.
Right. And
I get it.
But I don't have a big problem with the fact that no one puts in that research thing.
Yeah, they're all worried about surviving every day.
Right.
And like, I get that.
Yeah. But, like, there's no sustainability, right? There's no, like...
Come on. Also, did you guys... I didn't think about this until this fourth time. They're called Oms, which is the national, like, Buddhist thing to, like, start meditating and be calm. We should have seen that immediately.
Oh, the thing's called Tito. It's a fox squirrel.
Fox squirrel. Thank you. They named it? I didn't remember the naming.
It says Tito.
Did she call it Tito? It didn't put in, I don't remember that.
I think maybe they call it a Tito. Like, that's the name.
No. It's got an uppercase T.
I don't know, whatever, dude.
All right. I didn't remember the name, but I remember Fox Squirrel.
Sure. Fox Squirrel, Sounds right.
Yeah.
It's a cute Fox Squirrel.
It is.
It's a little rambunctious, a little rapscallion.
I would have named the Jolteon, but pretty sure there's, like, copyright infringement or something.
Yeah, even in the future, you have to pay someone.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, but like I said, overall, like, my biggest gripe with the movie is more of this creature. It's just like there's this science, and I don't want everything explained to me. I'm curious.
How long is this movie?
That's two hours.
2 hours.
I think it's either 2 hours or just shy of it.
Oh, okay. I would say, because if it was like more like 90, because I don't remember the time feeling.
157.
If it was 90,
157 minutes. No, it was not that long.
If it was 90, I would say, like, oh, maybe if they added 20 minutes to focus on that Pedrite warrior more, or maybe the military guy from the Tolmekians. Got it.
Yeah, you got it.
Not the warrior guy.
They spent too much time on that guy, but yeah.
Yeah, they spent a little too much time on him. But, like, not on him, but, like, on the princess.
Sure.
Like she still didn't come back after all that, you know, after seeing all this evidence constantly of her being wrong and her, but she will never, she's too big-headed to do it. Like, I think if maybe they spend an extra 10 to 15 minutes focusing on those characters, I think we probably could have come out with this movie a lot more richer.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you're right, there's only two, maybe three characters that are spent time on for any kind of background or characteristics. Right. You're right.
Yeah, that, like I said, that's honestly my only...
But this, like, the movie is like, this is a world-ending kind of movie.
Right.
This is a Marvel movie, essentially, where the world is going to end if nothing is done.
Sure.
So, like, yeah. Unfortunately, those movies pay little attention to that.
There's just cool... I almost want to make it my background for my wallpaper for my computer, and I'll bring it up to you right now, Oscar. And it's the cave, when she enters the cave and then, like, all the lighting hits down. That's a perfect painting for me. I really enjoy that.
I love that discovery of the underground tree thing when the air is good there, not toxic, underneath the trees.
Yes.
And then it makes sense, of course, that the bugs, which is their job, is to purify. It's like, it makes sense. We need insects. It's not like insects are bad things. Yeah. That's a cool one.
Right. It's funny. Yeah. I get a lot of it, and that's what I like about the movie a lot. And that's why I like the movie a lot, should I say. Not about the movie a lot. But like I said, I do have a gripe with it. There's nothing gigantic. That's how my brain works, and it sucks sometimes when you try to enjoy something like that.
Yeah, no.
But I do understand the reasoning behind it sometimes.
Hey, if anything, I should probably step... sometimes more in that direction, because I've been flashback to The Circle. So I'm one of the apparently I gave the most positive review of anyone on the planet.
Oh, yeah, you did, yeah.
I think
we were all the only, like, positive podcast.
No, like, you two were.
Okay.
Yeah, us two were. Like, and being associated with Luke.
No,
but I mean, like, compared to the world, Luke, we are in the wrong. I'm just saying, you know?
Yeah.
Just like how, you know, I feel like you're wrong about Nausicaa and compared to most of the world. Well, I do feel that way. I'm not saying that you feel that way. I'm saying I know that you're wrong. It's like The Circle is like, oh my God, everyone hates this movie. Like, why do people hate this movie? I'm reading all these reviews. I'm like, they're bogging down on the technology. I'm like, it's not about that. So I started defending myself. But
no, right, of course you did. Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I had a tech blog wrote about it, and I was like, and they're like, they hated it too. I was like, shut up. You guys are just happy because it, you know, interferes with what you guys want.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what it is. It doesn't fall in your cup of tea, so what's the point of liking it? But no, I can see something like this. I give more leeway, and I think overall in animated movies we gave more leeway to movies like that.
True.
Animation in general. So that's Nausicaa for me. I fucking enjoy it.
I love it.
Yep.
Luke hates it.
Sadly.
So Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, same spiel, is not really available anywhere to stream necessarily, but it is to rent and or buy. I suggest I have the Ghibli Studio DVD pack, which you can buy on Amazon. I think it's imported I'm 100%. But it's a great. It has all his movies. Sure. All good.
By the thing. One thing I will say.
Yeah.
English voice actor. Shia LaBeouf's in it.
LaBeouf.
Is it? There's somebody else who plays the old man.
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart.
There you go.
Yep.
Make it so.
Make it so.
Never mind.
Does he say that a lot?
No, don't worry.
Okay, I'm not worried. Anyway, that's Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we shall review a more newer film, but also another world-ending picture called Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. So, stay with us.
Uma Thurman's in it also.
The beast hide is too thick to be pierced from the outside. I must cut through it from the inside.
Huh? No, Trap! Wait a minute!
What is he doing?
He said the skin is too thick to be pierced from the outside. So
that doesn't make any sense.
I tried telling him that.
Skin is the same level of thickness from the inside as from the outside.
I realize that.
The Guardians of the Galaxies make new friends and enemies after Peter's father finally meets him with a galactic agenda. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I got this. Don't worry about it. Starring Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Michael Rocca, Rooker. I can't say that wrong. Karen Gillan, though. That is Karen Gillan. I totally forgot that.
It's
Nebula.
Yeah.
Nebula,
That's right.
We're going to go here. Sylvester Stallone. Okay.
That's right.
Pom Clementif, whoever the hell that is.
Sounds familiar.
Kurt Russell is in this movie, guys. Kurt Russell is making a comeback. Am I right?
He's never needed to.
He's making a Hollywood comeback.
You're like, maybe. Hey, I want to pay for my house mortgage.
I'm pretty sure he paid for his house mortgage a long time ago.
Dude.
I'm pretty sure he's more like, I need to...
China money paid for that.
I'm pretty sure he did, yeah. If he's got royalties. If he does not, poor sad man. No. Sean Gunn. I'm going to mention Sean Gunn just because it's Sean Gunn, guys.
Yep.
Tommy Flanagan.
Right, he's the one who gets sucked on the airlock.
Yeah. They show it. A lot of them get sucked on the airlock. All right, so I'll start off with this by throwing it to Luke. Luke, what did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
I was really pleased by it. I really enjoyed this movie. I was a little skeptical because the first movie was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, and phenomenal cosmic powers, right?
No, phenomenal.
Okay.
It was amazing. And, you know, I was hoping that this movie would actually be continuing this. And, you know, it pretty much captured everything I loved about the first movie and made it a little bit better.
So it's better than the first one?
Maybe not the soundtrack.
Okay.
I definitely agree with that.
I'll definitely agree with you there also. I mean, I'm not saying that.
I mean, Cass Stevens is great, but...
Sure, exactly. I completely agree with you there, but that first volume mixtape is fucking spot on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oscar, what did you think? I'll go last for once.
I do not think it's better than the first. Not to say that it isn't a really kind of a blast to watch. This is escapism in cinema to the T. It's everything you need as far as, like, you want to forget your life for 2 hours. This is the movie, or one of the movies you can watch to do that. It is action packed. It's funny as hell for the most part, especially with Drax this time around. And it's a very interesting little geek. Nuggets of information and like little things. I'm not just talking about the Stan Lee thing or Howard the Duck, but just the other little things, like how the science works in this world and how it's they have like 3-4 stingers in this movie this time, like they double down on it. Overall, it's a lot of fun. It's easily watchable. Anyone on the planet can watch it unless they hate space or they hate action.
So my mom. Okay.
So right, only if you hate those two things.
I
would not recommend this movie. But you know, but that's not to say it's not for everyone, but it's more for most people. So yeah, it's really easy to watch. I liked it, yeah.
Cool. I'm going to chime in here and say basically the same thing. I will agree with Oscar, though. It is not better than Part 1. Part 1 does a better job. I hate to say it. Or not hate to say it, but just a good, better movie.
Love to say it.
Love to say it, yeah. That's, I didn't think it was going to be as funny as the movie was. I honestly thought that was going to be lacking in this movie. They were just going to, you know, phone it in, or not phone it in, but more like just not be as witty. It still felt really witty, which is really cool. I overall enjoyed a lot of the stuff. The visuals are still there. Overall, like, in your face, kind of like Speed Racer style, which, by the way,
no, that would burn your fucking eyeballs.
I just saw recently Speed Racer, and if I saw that movie in theaters, I would have no eyeballs.
I've seen it in theaters.
I know why you wear glasses now. So that being said,
I like that one.
Let's talk about how they steal from the Fast and the Furious franchise, and talk about family this whole movie.
No, they also steal from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Because, like, the first movie and the second movie of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs has the exact same pros and cons as Guardians 1 and 2.
Yes, I agree.
The first one is the intro, of course, and it's sure. pretty funny, and it's out there, very adventure-y. Funny, I think it's funnier, the first one, Cloudy and Guardians. Okay. And then Guardians 2 comes around, and they have Baby Groot, which is the cutest character. Cloudy 2, they have the little strawberry cutest character I've ever seen.
Everywhere.
They also have a father figure-esque person that you thought that he wanted to be a good guy, turned out to be a bad guy. Same thing here with Kurt Russell.
Spoiler.
So similar. Yeah, I know. Very similar. I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
And yes, you know, family.
Family.
Familia.
If someone said Familia in this movie, it would have been like, okay, they obviously just finished watching like a marathon of Fast and Furious movies, and right. they needed to talk about family.
See you at the end of the quarter mile.
And they got Kurt Russell
only
in.
Live a quarter right. mile at a time.
Sorry. A quarter parsec at a time?
Yeah. Oof. I don't know about that.
I know I'm combining fucking...
Right, exactly.
You fucking geeks. Anyway, let it go. Sorry. You're saying...
I wasn't saying anything. You were saying something.
I was just joking.
Oh, okay.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, it was. Someone laughed out there.
I'm going to agree with you here. I think Drax is actually a way funnier character this time around.
Oh, yeah.
And just overall, I mean, I think he gets the limelight a little bit more than he did in the first one. Although it does feel like his agenda in the first one is a lot bigger than everybody else's agenda in comparison.
Yeah. And this one, he doesn't have one.
And this one, exactly. He doesn't have one. But he's like the rock in the relationship. He's fine where he is.
It's more like first is Paul. I mean, Paul. Peter, sorry.
Sure.
Peter, Paul, whatever. Peter's obviously number one. And then second, I don't want to say it's Gamora necessarily. Gamora was definitely second in the second one. And the first one, sorry. Fucking Christ. her and Drax were pretty much equal. But it's really Raccoon and then her. And then Drax and Groot don't have a real... thing going
right, because they're like the rocks of the they're foundation.
The rocks are just they're taking aside a backseat, I guess, plot wise or motivation wise for this particular movie. Maybe they'll come up with something on the next one when there's a teenager Groot or something. He'll be rebellious.
Sure,
I don't know what. Did we ask him yet?
I didn't ask him. What did you think about that? Did you think about Drax overall, like better, worse?
Kind of a little bit worse.
Okay.
I think I liked him in the first one, though. Bit better.
Was it just because of the fact that it was like still new to you? That he was this like that type of personality he is?
Yeah, I think his personality was much better established in the first one.
Okay.
Here I kind of feel like he was kind of like lacking something.
So you thought, like, maybe like he hammed it or something? Like it was just a ham-on or something? Or do you think like...
I wouldn't think of it as that. Like, that for me, that was like... That's a kind of like a low thing that he would do. But no...
Okay, I get what you're saying. I don't know.
He felt like in the first one, like I felt that was like his true self. This is him, just like not quite there.
Okay, I mean, I can see where you're coming from.
That's funny because I saw him as Drax being more comfortable, more able to
That's where I was gonna go.
Like more willing to joke with them, but also failing at it. But his timing is so right that it's both funny and the fact that he's not funny.
See, the thing is, I think Drax wouldn't do that. I think Drax is like Drax, and it's like a constant.
Well, I think it's like not. I think they've been together enough where the point where like he understands one thing and he's never gonna understand the other. Like, he gets the timing done right, for example, right? But he doesn't get, like, there's a punchline for things or whatever, right?
Nine.
So he'll never figure that out, and he's always going to get that wrong. But he knows that that's supposed to mean something, so he's going to chime in at that time.
Right. And I do think it's more like he's familiar with these people. I mean, he's not going to be a robot or...
Exactly.
He's not going to be Monk, you know, I'm trying to think of a character that's like that. Or Spock, maybe? Maybe that's Spock type.
Yeah, I guess.
Type, not type. Spock, exactly. Because in the first one, yeah, he's introduced. He's really kind of annoyed by everybody more than entertained by them, right? So they're not friends yet. They're friends at the end of the movie.
Do you think they doubled... I have a cool question for the movie. And you brought it up when you were talking about the intro about the movie. Do you think, like, they doubled down way too much on Groot scenes or on Groot in general, the character...
No.
What else can you do to this character without them doing something whimsical or witty, or
I mean, they kind of did everything that I foresaw them do. They tortured a little baby Groot so you can feel really sad and bad, and also like want to make sure that those people died, got their comeuppance.
Sure.
You had the big, almost the anime eyes on Groot. Like Jesus, yeah. He was so fucking cute. And I would say that bit of him bringing back all the wrong stuff went on a little too long.
I would agree, yeah. Just a little bit, not too much.
I mean, when it got to the table, I'm like, can you just get the fucking thing already? You know, for example.
I just love when he brought a thumb out.
Yeah, that was great. That was perfect. It should have stopped there.
Right,
that,
you guys have a refrigerator?
He's like, no.
With the thumb? He's like, no.
Which is funny because I asked Brian, friend of the show, about it. He's like, what did Baby Groot, like he was talking about the scene, like cut, you know. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that's really weird and morbid. Violent and morbid. I'm like, yeah, but in the original, Groot has always been very violent. It's not like he's never not killed people. I mean, he kills that guy with glee as Baby Groot. Remember when he climbs on the...
Yeah.
He's not... Everyone here kills a lot.
Yeah, exactly. They just care for each other.
But my favorite scene of his is just the intro because they...
Oh, that was so
I guess
perfect.
They developed a staple of like dancing while violence or something weird's going on in the background.
Sure.
This was even better than the first one, I would say. The intro to...
I'm going to agree with you.
Dancing
on. Yeah,
that was so awesome.
That's really awesome. And it's just like, we're
and
following
him. And he hates
him.
Drax for like...
But you still see everything
the,
in the back. Yeah. You kind of know what's going on
right,
in the fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Well, and I love that everyone also like sees where he is and they're like, dude, take care of yourself, Groot. Like, come on, like, get out of the
way. Right, everyone. He's like a child.
Right.
Yeah. But they're not great parents either.
No, they're...
To keep him on the ship or something.
Right, exactly.
Like they should be.
They're like, you're your own person. Like, you're good. Don't worry about it, right? Just don't die, you know?
Yeah, I like that. Okay. So there's some really good stuff on this movie that I think does really well for a sequel in a surprising way. And then on the other hand, they do some stuff that I don't think they did really well. Not just for a sequel, but for any fucking movie. So let's talk about the good stuff, I guess, first is that I like how every consequence actually is a plot in the movie. There is, for example, there is not an exaggerated amount of new characters we have to learn because every new character, either they start off as amicable friends or slight enemies, they either turn on a dime or not, but they're still there. They never change that. Like, the gold people are constant from that first mission, their introduction to the movie, right?
Yes.
Like, him stealing the crystals, which goes into
batteries.
The rocky... Batteries, sorry. Like crystals.
Well, the crystallized batteries.
Crystallized batteries. He steals that, and that becomes a plot point of Rocket Raccoon's character by the end of the movie that you realize, and that's fine. But he steals that, and that causes the exact problems that causes the stinger at the end of the movie. And the actual, like, weird personal breakdown of their queen or whatever, which, you know, which didn't seem possible because they were so golden and perfect and genetically spliced, you know, sequenced perfectly.
But it makes sense, and I'll just chime in real quick before I...
Yeah.
Because it makes sense because nobody is perfect genetically.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I love it. I'm saying...
Okay, cool,
like,
cool.
It was amazing how they consistently kept out that villain, and it kind of snowballed into, theoretically, the villain of the third movie.
Sure, yeah.
I like how because I didn't know what was going to be the... I didn't see enough trailers to know what the conflict was going to be in this movie, if they were actually going to be saving worlds or a world. But I was surprised that it was, and I liked how it ended up being his father. Like, his father was the answer to questions in the first movie, but at the same time, he was the actual conflict of the movie. So they kept it all in house, is my point. They didn't introduce too many characters. They introduced the Mantis Girl, and that's it, because the Ravagers we knew already.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, now we know the bigger aspect of them.
We know how bigger they are, right. The network of them all. But we just met Stallone in two scenes, and he was like a throwaway.
Cameo.
No, cameo is one shot, but yeah, anyway. So yeah, I like that. The movie is very consistent. The plot is surprisingly well thought out for a sequel of this magnitude, anyway. It's not fucking Lawrence of Arabia or anything, but never seen it.
So
anyway. So do you guys agree with that? Like everything's succinct, it's nice and tidy.
Yeah, I completely agree. Everybody stays true to themselves. You even have things from the past come up in this one. For example, like the Gamora and the, I already forgot her sister's name.
Nebula.
Nebula, even though I'm the one who brought it up. Gamora and Nebula's past, that comes from the first movie, right? We have, oh my God, what the fuck is Rooker's name in this movie?
Yondu. Michael Rooker. Yondu?
Yondu, yeah. Yondu Rooker. Is that what you said?
No, Yondu. Yeah.
No, I said Michael Rooker.
Oh, okay. I heard Yondu and you said Rooker right at the end. So I was like,
Yondu Rooker.
Yondu, yeah. Rooker. Sounds great. Yeah, Yondu's character, also like his past from the original, from the first movie, and obviously before.
Now that was more streamlined.
Yeah, of course it was. But I'm saying, yeah. what I'm saying is like everybody's consequences stuff comes back to everybody.
True.
Everybody's actions comes back to bite them.
So what's another thing you guys liked about the film?
Sorry,
thematic, no, plot, character, or something?
I mean, I don't know. Go ahead. I have things that I disliked, so go ahead.
No, I said like.
I know, that's why I didn't want to say it.
Taser face.
Yeah, that wasn't funny the first time, but then it got funny.
Oh my god. To, like, I 100% agree with you.
They forced taser me.
Taser face was not funny at
they
first.
They forced me to like it. And then when you started describing, like, I can just see you in the mirror just talking to yourself.
Yeah,
like,
I'm taser face.
And everyone's just laughing.
Yeah.
And he goes off by that golden woman laughing at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... That was funny. It's equivalent to Rocket Raccoon. Like, I need his leg. I need his eye. Right. what else? So the comedy clearly worked for us overall.
I think overall the comedy worked out.
Yeah.
I have more gripes with this little odds and ends than I have with the movie. I think every character overall fits fine. There's just what I didn't like too much is this whole like. Are they in a relationship or not? Gamora and Quill.
Yes, I'm glad they didn't spend too much time as I thought they would.
Right. Well, they hint at most of the movie.
It was still fun with how they did it.
Sure. Right. Right. I mean, he's still charming and stuff, you know, and he tries to woo or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, woo his way in and stuff, and she's just like fucking oblivious to everything, and at the same time, doesn't know what to do or with the feelings that she has. But it felt like that was in the first movie.
Yeah.
And I felt like we're just continuing off this.
You thought she was oblivious?
Well, she more like oblivious at some points. Yes, I do think that. But then other times she doesn't. Doesn't know what to do with her feelings.
Oh, I just thought she was like a better composure. She's like, I'm not gonna be like this dweeb.
Oh, I mean that could be too. Also, yeah.
No, I think she's like by force a conservative kind of. Like she is just doesn't know dancing.
Well, that's
much
what I was
less.
Just, yeah, sure.
The trials of wooing somebody or being wooed by, so much less sex or relationships. Or she doesn't, clearly she's like a celibate completely. Just saying, it seems like everything in the first movie too just describes it her that way.
I mean, one of my favorite scenes, and I'll get to what I did like about the movie is Yondu where he shows off his whistling skills in that security room, for example. That's a fucking amazing scene.
Yeah,
like, well, where he kills like 50 people.
Yeah,
more.
Right. I mean,
like I said.
Yeah, I mean, those scenes are really cool. It's super cool, especially when he gets, like, you see how his ability works.
Yeah, that's a James Gunn, yeah. Ism. Have you seen his movie, Super Slither? Anyone seen those movies?
I have, yeah.
James Gunn did those movies. Yeah.
Was that fool coming up right from top, overhead view?
Yeah, he does that sometimes. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm saying an ism of his is that he manages to combine, like, very brutal violence and surprising amount of death in his movies with comedy, or with it being like light and airier than it should
right.
be, because he's always violent. He's not just violent, like he will show the blood, he will show the guts, he will show, you know,
sure.
So like I think that ism kind of really seeped worked, you know, it was in this movie a lot. So I would say as a James Gunn as a director point of view, he did a man that was good. That was well seen. So I agree. I like that scene. But here's one thing I didn't like that kind of leads me into that, is that for all the murdering and death and wanton destruction, and here's the thing, is that this movie never convinced me, and none of these movies have ever convinced me that our heroes are in trouble. So there's that. And because of that, I can't all this wanton destruction, and I'm sorry, I don't really care about spending 5 minutes or 10 minutes on that funeral scene. Like the death of one person. He killed like 50 billion people that were his companions. I know,
but
mutiny.
It's Yon, dude.
I know, mutiny. But like also like years and years and years of working with them. I'm just saying, if you want senseless death, one hand, right? I kind of...
So do you think the movie would have done better if we spent more time with Yondu than just that one stripper scene or whatever that he's at that brothel?
No. I mean, I did like his turnaround.
Sure.
Overall. It's not that bad of a problem, but it is something that should be at least said. Not too bad about it because I don't know what a solution is looking like for these movies, for these Marvel movies, for these blockbuster movies. I don't know how to make it better because as far as I know, people are loving the insane killing and can also feel for one character that did all the killing. So I don't know. Sure. You know, it's kind of like, all right, fine, whatever. I don't know how to answer that. But all I know is that it troubled me a little bit that that people seem to kind of like gloss over that. So that's one. And then another one is Kurt Russell, which I love. I love that guy. He gave one of the weirdest and I don't know if it's one of the worst, but it's one of the most expensive exposition dumps on the planet with the dioramas.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys like that?
No.
It was
that
weird.
Was weird.
It was weird.
Weird wrong, I mean. Not weird right.
Yeah, definitely wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I like.
But then again, you got all that time and power. What else are you going to do?
Yeah, that's what I said too. Yeah,
make dioramas.
But then again, if you had all that time and power, why don't you make them a little bit better looking?
Right, and also like he made one with him coupling with all the races. I'm like, did you have that one ready for the for the eventual god figure that you wanted, the sun?
Or did you just like put in the races? Like, hey, I like when I bang this one, so I'm just gonna put her in.
Right, and for someone who was so patient to wait millions of years, he was so impatient once Peter got in. I'm like, Jesus, give it a couple thousand years. A big fucking rush.
Just go back down to Earth.
Like, literally,
check a couple broads.
He's like, right, yeah.
Shock a broad.
Take him out, right? Like, why does it have to be right now? Oh, of course, because it's a movie and it has to be galactically ending. They have to save all these planets. It's, what was that? Anyway.
Cheer.
What was that noise? Whose footprints are these?
What's in the box?
Who's touching me?
Okay.
I didn't say stop.
So that's a problem. And also, I said this to you before, the idea of fighting a planet is kind of ridiculous.
Sure, as long as you can sleep it.
It's not like the planet is not fighting back. Kurt Russell is, I guess. And then the gold people come in. That's the only part that kind of redeemed it is because they came in. And like, it's a nice tie-in, right?
To the boat. It is a nice tie-in, yeah. But it also feels like we have this character that we meet. This is where I guess I get to the dislikes of the movie and why the first movie is better. Was the dislikes of the movie was where we get this character who helps the Kurt Russell's character fall asleep, right?
Mantis lady?
Yeah. And like she's just there basically to stall, like, and that's to hold the movie back to do things so we can get another force in here to catch up and stuff like that. Like,
oh yeah, you're
like, she's
right.
Just there for no reason, really, like just to be there, or to move this plot for this reason, for that one.
And also,
reason.
Like, you know, the solution to everything is blowing something up. I know that Groot is the one who does it, and that does make it better because it's cuter.
It is, yeah.
But in the end, it's like the same reason. I mean, it's a god. I mean, it seems like you shouldn't get away with this.
Right.
It seems weird that they could pull this off, is my point. And of course, everyone survives, which they should, I guess, because it's one of those movies. I don't know. So it just bugs me. And like, you know, I've said this before, and I think we just recently released our bonus episode for Doctor Strange, and I re-listened to it. And it did say something a lot about my beef with Marvel and the world ending all the time, and it's really getting annoying. But I like Doctor Strange's ending for his boss battle better than Guardians 2. At least his was smart, and
yeah,
it was nothing I've ever seen before, and it was kind of
that was a cool ending.
This one was just blowing up the core.
Yeah, well, there is a problem, and I agree with you where we're never going to lose our heroes. Our heroes are never going to die.
Yeah, there's no trouble.
In the end, there's really no trouble. So what do you do? Like,
I don't know how to fix this problem.
I mean, you're going to get to a point where
this is why
either somebody has to die or retire. Somebody picks up a mantle. Like, what happens? Why do the good guys only get to live? And are they good guys because they're killing a bunch of people also?
Well, but theoretically, I mean, they're kind of not, right? I mean,
right, exactly.
They make a lot of enemies.
Sure, right. Yeah, yeah, so there's
if anything, that. I mean, they're making enemies of people that we're told to hate, but we have no reason to hate an entire civilization just because Rocket Raccoon wanted their batteries. That's wrong.
Right.
But also, like, it's a movie, so it's fine. Yeah, it's the language of the movie.
Yeah, but they were douchebags.
I get it. They're stuck-up assholes with Nazis. Well, yeah,
like I brought up in the beginning.
Genealogy.
I brought this up at the beginning of the movie when we were watching it in theaters to Luke, yeah. I think, as like this whole planet race hires the Guardians of the Galaxy to stop this incoming right. threat, right? Because they can't expend the force, the energy, or whatever
right.
to defend themselves. But these guys steal a couple of batteries that they were defending, right? A couple.
Balls out.
This guy, this creature was going to take all of their energy, right?
Yeah.
And this guy takes like 5 batteries or something. Yeah. Now, they're worth a lot of money, right? And they're worth it's a lot of energy or whatever. But they use all the force they have to go after them.
They lose in 2 entire squadrons or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. By the way, very cool gaming video system there.
Very cool gaming, yeah. Yeah.
How much do you want to be a pilot on that thing? Come on, no risk. It's risk free. They're drones.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. I like the thrill.
Then you wouldn't be in that.
I feel like.
And you wouldn't be there.
Is that Stargate episode?
Dude, did you just register for Stargate?
Yes.
I think Rob just.
A little bit. I might have just like.
You know which one I'm talking about.
Of course I know what I'm talking about. I've seen this episode like 3 times.
I don't.
They get. Yeah, never mind.
Fuck you. Explain it.
They go to a planet.
Whoever watched Stargate already knows what I'm talking about.
They go to a planet. Do you want to explain it?
It's like the one episode I watched.
The one episode you watched?
No, it's fine.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'll explain it after.
You really don't want to explain it.
No, I can explain the whole episode.
No, it's fine. You can tell me later. Anything else on the Guardians? Anything that quibbles, mistakes, or positive stuff?
I like Mantis.
I think she's pretty bland. She had nothing going on.
That I think was her charm. She was so like naive and, you know, but she had this like little ulterior motive because she kind of wanted to, you know, really show what that was going on.
No, yeah. No, I just saw her. I didn't see anything more.
I
than
just
bland.
Think like she's there to let everybody else in.
But
on
she's
the
part
thing.
Of the team now. I guess she'll get. Hopefully, she'll get some nice character to her.
Sure.
Yeah. I really like Drax's ongoing joke about how kidding she is.
I honestly feel like she's gonna be the next person to die because. She's not part of the core group.
Like, not if she is for the next one.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like,
what do we think of the whole?
Only be 5.
The whole Ravager team. They're gearing up for something for part 3, theoretically, right? Because
that's
they don't put Stallone in for nothing, and right. Michelle Yeoh for one scene. You don't do that for no reason.
Who?
Michelle Yeoh. Remember when they did the funeral?
That's right.
And they showed like the other Ravager leaders, you know, hailing Yondu for his death or whatever. Remember? And all those people are famous actors. They're like, you wouldn't hire them for no reason. Unless
I'm just trying to think what this person looks like.
Michelle Yeoh, she's in fucking Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, son. And then...
No, I see her.
Yeah, you see her now. And she's in...
Babylon AD, Sunshine, Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah, Tomorrow Never Dies. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah.
Okay. Mechanic Resurrection.
Oh my gosh, she's in that movie? I haven't seen it. It looks awful. Yeah, so... Like, what do you think? I mean, are you excited for that plot like going on? Are you excited for more of the gold member plot? Because there's 2 of them right there. You're excited how this is going to... Infinity Stone, what do you guys want from the third movie?
There was nothing really with the Infinity Stones
Thank God,
this
by
one.
The way. Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't need to. What they kind of... what's it called? Joined forces with... I already forgot her name again. Gamora's sister.
Nebula.
Thank you, guys. With Nebula, I almost forgot again.
After we just told
Nebula.
You.
Nebula.
Doesn't help. Anyways, Matt where she's kind of going to help fight, what's it called, Thanos.
Right, because she wants to still kill him.
Right. So I feel like they're gathering overall help with getting to Thanos eventually. We're seeing some type of army. Like they're obviously
and it looks like Thor Ragnarok
possibly
might also
Ravagers.
Be the jumping point to that.
Same thing.
Because
he's
also in space and shit.
Right, exactly.
And he's the only connection to Earth that we all like.
Oh my God, Michelle Yeoh was in Super Cop.
Dude, that's a great movie.
Yeah, it was.
That's so old.
Super Cop is awesome.
Michelle Yeoh has been around, dude.
Michelle Yeoh's been around. Yeah, how do you
she
not
can
know
kick
she
all of our asses with a pencil.
Gladly.
What pencil? Oh no.
What? So not this. Pencil.
Although
a mechanic
Super Cop
too.
For us, it's. Police Story 3.
What are you doing?
I'm looking up these interesting people.
Are you like fucking... I almost said the other word.
Anyway.
Stupid?
There you go. Yeah. I still had fun with the movie.
No,
there's still problems. they have to blow up a planet because, unfortunately, to kill Kurt Russell, that is Kurt Russell. Like, the planet.
In a way, his stardom is as big as a planet because sure, he is exactly. a beloved man in my history.
Do we want to see, and I bring this up, ever... They never go anywhere near Earth. Do we ever want to see them go towards Earth?
We saw the Dairy Queen.
No, that's a flashback.
No, that's a flashback, though. And okay, I get it. We saw the one part where the thing grows.
No, I think Rob is asking if the Guardians going.
I'm talking about the Guardians. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I know what he meant.
Dumbass.
I'm just being that guy.
Yeah, you are. I mean, yes.
But is this like?
I mean, my ideal. I want. Are we getting I want them Thanos? To meet the Avengers. I just want them.
Are we getting there in Thanos times?
I want Rocket to just make fun of the Hulk because he's so big. Or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
No, I think it will be because of Thanos. I don't think they'll meet exactly on Earth, but I think they'll do something together.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably like a passing thing. Like a passing ship.
I have a question because, I mean, it has to come to a point where they know where Thanos is. They know, obviously, not where Thanos is, but they obviously know of Thanos, right? The Guardians of the Galaxy. They obviously know of Earth, right? Mm-hmm. They have no purpose to go to Earth. Now, more than likely, everybody's coming to Earth, right? That's what eventually is gonna something's gonna have to happen around there, right? Or are the Avengers or those or anybody or those team going out in that outer space? Because one of the two has to happen,
right? But it seems like less likely that the Avengers is going out of space.
Right, I agree. That's what I'm saying. It does seem less likely. Less likely. It's gonna happen.
It could be a two-front battle, like they'll battle Thanos after he loses a battle in Earth, or the other way around.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be fun to find out. But also, like, I assume there will be consequences because of Kurt Russell's seed pod that blew up and took almost an entire town, right?
Right.
And on Earth, and not to mention a town in every fucking planet.
Right. Shit ton of planets.
Right. Shit ton of planets. That guy spread his seed around.
What was he gonna do?
He spread his seed around literally.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, like, that's probably gonna be some consequences. Maybe they'll be asked questions and find a way to talk to Thor about it or something.
Yeah, okay, you
know? That'd be fun. Or look into it. Yeah, that's really anything else on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
Not a great soundtrack, but still a good movie.
Well, not better. I think it's still a great soundtrack. Just not as memorable as the first one.
Right, the first one had all the hits.
No, like, just more memorable for me.
Yeah,
for us clearly.
Right, there.
I think there's degrees of songs, of value of songs.
Agreed.
Cat Stevens is better than any of those, but. Not as memorable as Uga Chaka. So, I know that's not the name of the song. All right, so that's it for our review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. One thing I forgot to mention before is we're going to talk about animation stuff. We're going to talk about, not animation recommendation, but we're going to talk about Hayao Miyazaki's other films, and then Luke was going to talk about the one he saw recently and what we recommend from Hayao Miyazaki that isn't the two movies we reviewed today. So let's get into that corner now and talk about it real quick before we exit the show. Luke, what was that movie that you saw for the first time recently from Miyazaki? It was what?
That Oscar one.
My Neighbor Totoro?
Yeah, what did you think?
That he was the cutest thing ever.
No,
he was
Totoro?
So big. Yeah.
Didn't you want to hug him all the time?
Oh my God.
I just want to sleep on him. I just want to sleep on him.
I mean, I never saw the movie until just maybe
I want to ride the cat a couple years ago. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, me cool. too. Cat
and
bus.
I just, like, my whole childhood and shit, or not childhood, but like for early 2000s until now. Fucking that Totoro's been everywhere, and I'm like, dude, I gotta watch this movie eventually.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh yeah, that's Totoro. Yeah. I know what that is.
I know who it is. Yeah, exactly. But
I don't remember much of the plot anymore because it has been a while since I've seen it. I've only seen it twice, or maybe once and a half. It's a short movie, if I remember correctly.
It's shorter than Nausicaa. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like short, like 80 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's like, what is it about? It's about orphans or something? And now that with a mother dying or something.
Mom's just in the hospital.
Yeah. Sorry. See something. I don't remember. It's been a while.
Yeah. You went dark quick, though.
I went dark quick. Yep. I had to go there. But I love that film. What else can we recommend? If you like Howl's Moving Castle, I recommend Castle in the Sky. Very clearly similar thing
going
on.
Two movies I haven't seen yet.
You haven't seen Howl's Moving Castle?
Nope.
Well, I think Christian Bale and Billy Crystal do some of the voices of those people.
Yeah, that's actually right.
If I remember correctly. Castle in the Sky, it's they're both very different in the way of thematics and also the kind of heroes that there are. Like Howl's Moving Castle is definitely more gray and more overall magical and kind of like more convoluted. Castle in the Sky is more simplistic, but also like it deals heavily with government control, and they're trying to search for this castle, and this boy has been there and trying to get him to find a way to get there,
yeah.
If I remember correctly. And they're both very similar because they both involve a castle in the fucking sky. So I recommend
That. Yeah, I would recommend a lighter movie, I guess. Kiki's Delivery Service.
Totally.
I haven't seen it.
I mean,
great sense of adventure.
Yeah, great sense of adventure. And actually, same thing with Spirited Away. It brings up things of responsibility and finding your that. Well, this is more finding your place and what you want to do or how you want to do things. So that's a really cool thing about the movie. It's really fun. I got to watch it, I think, a couple years ago, and it's just a really fun ride overall.
Also, Miyazaki's version of The Little Mermaid is Ponyo, which I recommend too. It's like a, it's like a reverse gender reversal.
I've yet to see it.
Properly. Don't watch it with douchebags. Right. Lucas, for some reason, proud of this.
It was the best movie to make fun of.
Why are you proud of this? No, they wouldn't make fun of anything.
Davey Bowie looking ass motherfucker.
Yeah, he did look
like David Bowie.
I'm not disagreeing.
To be fair,
rest in peace, David Bowie.
Yeah. And that was Liam Neeson who acted, the voice actor.
That was Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
I'll always recommend The Wind Rises. I love that movie. I really love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I already spoke about that.
The Wind Rises is definitely his most straight story. It's like it's a biopic based on a history about the guy who did the fighter jet planes for Japan and during the World War II. So it's a big deal. And it's about the man who is very passionate, leads to forces of destruction that are beyond his control. And it's harrowing. It's kind of sad,
but it's
melancholy.
Right.
It's also very beautiful the way she falls in love with his wife. And it's really an amazing movie.
Right. It's about a guy who wants to push further technology. Even though he knows that it's going towards destruction and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sadly.
It's amazing. Yeah. I love them. I'm going to watch the movie again. So that's The Wind Rises. That's all of Miyazaki's films overall for the most part. So now we can exit the show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. Please remember you can send feedback at podmoviecast@gmail.com about any of these titles we talked about. I would love to learn what you think of these titles. You can follow me personally on Armin Filmmaker for Twitter. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke.
At Blind Noir.
You can follow me at Gamer Ralph. That's with two R's and an F.
That's right. And also I am a part of another podcast that I produce, and sometimes I talk in it. SOS-Radio is the podcast, which you can find at sos-radio.com. Don't forget the dash, because otherwise you get like...
A lot of other shit.
You get like Christian radio or something.
That's funny.
I'm not even kidding. That's what I heard anyway for podcasts. So, we talk about supernatural stuff. We recently did one of our president, our founder. He went to Area 51 and did a reporting there. And we have a new reporter that's going to chime in on monthly stuff for us.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of that stuff recently. And we're planning a big trip in the summer. So, yeah, check it out. It's really great for anything relating to the supernatural, things we don't know, you know?
Cool.
So,
if you have any interest in gaming, feel free to follow me at Twitter. I do some stuff on Caffeine TV, caffeine.tv, and on twitch.tv under Sutrauma. Figure out how to spell that.
Psyox?
S-I-O-U-X.
So I had saying it for I told somebody how to say my name today, and they were like, never would have guessed that's how you say your name. And I was like, it's all good, man. Don't worry about it.
I'm sure you just love that reaction. That's what you say.
At this point, I do, yes.
Remember, we are an independent podcast. Of course, we're not holding on to anybody but ourselves. That being said, of course, you can feel free to send us an iTunes rating. That will be a great help for other people to
Amazing
listen to
help.
Us.
Amazing help.
If not, if you like something a little harder, more hardcore, you can donate to our show at otherpodcast.com. Any amount will give you bonus episodes every month. This month, our bonus episode is King Arthur and the Sword of the
There's
Legend of the
else.
Sword. Nope.
Oh, it is
King
yes,
Arthur
right
and the Legend of the Sword. So if you are interested in getting that for a bonus episode 5 months before we'll actually release
it's a Guy Ritchie film.
Like, it's Guy Ritchie. It's a guy named Guy.
He was married to Madonna.
He was, and he made a horrible movie called Swept Away, I think.
Didn't see it.
Don't watch it.
Don't even.
It's
like Transformers movies. I don't watch anymore.
Remember, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other Friday. Next time, Ralph, what are we watching? Do you remember?
Hold on. Before we do that.
Okay. Wow.
Don't be a dick. Donate to us. We like money. Listen, we go to AMC a lot. We have stub memberships.
The AMC.
Okay? We pay the yearly fee.
Mine just came up.
Mine, same thing. Mine's about to come up. July. But they're already hounding me for money.
I know, me too. I waited till the last minute.
Of course, me too. Anyways, listen, I'm willing to drop a couple bucks. I'll go on the cheap days. I don't need to go on the expensive days.
Yeah, we try to go on Tuesdays.
Yeah. We know the deals. Just giving you a quick heads up. It's for you guys, not for us. Other than that, what are we reviewing next week?
On May 26th is our next show. We're reviewing one of Luke's animated feature picks.
Oh yeah,
Luke's only one movie. We're doing that. we'll be doing Roxophon.
Plural dices concierto, concierto.
Say that again. Is that the full title or something?
Yes.
Okay. So Roxophon what?
Pluralitas or something? Concierto.
Concentio?
Yeah.
Concerto.
Is it like Latin?
I think so.
Let's call it Latin.
Yeah. And then, Raf, you're choosing the other two movies for us. Do you remember what they were? Because I forgot.
We're doing Baywatch.
That's right. We are doing Baywatch, which comes out that weekend.
That weekend, actually. Yeah. Yes. So we have to...
The Rock, Zac Efron, tits.
Sure.
And two of those girls, I've seen them. One of them I saw in San Andreas. Jesus, beautiful. But the movie is kind of like one of those. It looks like a rated R version of Baywatch.
Right, so exactly.
And then expect some good raunchy fun.
Right, and then the other movie we're watching is The Wall.
The Wall, that's
we're
going
to go for The Wall, yes.
We're going to go for The Wall. If not, if we can't do The Wall, we might do Alien Covenant.
Alien Covenant, correct, yes.
But we are not so excited with that one particularly. Right, Wall. We're for The Wall.
Yeah, I'm not, but yeah.
No, but it's you, that's fine. Sure. If you're not, we're not. That's a Doug Liman picture, so that is what you'd be expecting for us next time. Until then, my loyal listeners, I am Oscar.
And Luke.
And Ralph.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. What the hell was that?